Labour politician speaking about money going to benefits and not going to defence.
Lip service is paid to the risks, the threats, the bright red signals of danger. But even the promised national conversation about defence can't be started.
A huge embarrassment for the government. Happier financial times.
Get that Euro Millions feeling with this Friday's £165 million Euro Millions mega jackpot. Euro Millions from the National Lottery.
Never mind the millions, who wants to be a billionaire? We explain how that works. Plus, a key vote. Social media bosses quizzed in Parliament ahead of that vote for a ban for under-16s. We'll give you the full background. Those stories and more follow. The 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the Chancellor will hold talks with her US counterpart in Washington later after saying that she's very angry the US went to war with Iran without an exit plan. Rachel Reeves says families across Britain are suffering the consequences as a result of America's actions. Her comments coincide with yesterday's stark forecast predicting Britain will be hit the hardest by the conflict's economic fallout. Harry Quilter-Pinner is from the economic think tank, the Institute for Public Policy Research, and has given his reaction to LBC.
I think what has singled us out is our dependence on energy imports. So the UK imports more of its energy than many other countries, and that means when there's a global shock, we are more exposed, and we're seeing that in the forecast that the IMF has put out and the prediction that our growth will be hit harder than many other G7 nations.
The US Vice President says Iran's negotiators want to make a deal, but has warned mistrust between the nations can't be solved overnight. J.D. Vance was speaking after President Trump suggested that talks aimed at ending the war could resume in the next 2 days. A state visit by the King and Queen to the US later this month won't include a meeting with survivors of the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Buckingham Palace sources say they don't want to risk jeopardising any legal action that could bring justice. The couple have faced calls for a meeting in light of Epstein's ties to the King's brother, Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor. The former prince has always strongly denied any wrongdoing. MPs will vote for a second time later on whether to ban under-16s from social media. Sir Keir Starmer is under pressure to back a Lord's amendment made to the Children's Wellbeing in Schools Bill. A consultation is due to run until the end of next month. Children's Minister Josh McAllister insisted to LBC last month the government's not been dragging its feet on the issue.
We have taken powers to legislate on the outcomes of that consultation, so we will act really quickly. There are important and detailed questions like what is social media, is WhatsApp social media, is YouTube social media.
And the government has further reduced the number of hotels used to house asylum seekers. 11 locations will no longer be used, bringing the total down to 185. The Home Office says the fall is down to people being removed from the UK or being housed at alternative sites. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,609. It closed up 26 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather. An unsettled and windy day for many, but rain will move eastward through the UK by the afternoon. A high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Right, that's it. Come on, lights out. You've got a test tomorrow.
Just 2 minutes. I'm about to reach the next level.
It's going off now.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's see. Where's the app? Oh, here it is. Ha.
What? How?
Oh, no. You're out. Better luck next
Mom!
Time.
Mum!
It's game over for late nights on school nights. EE Wi-Fi controls help you get them off the Wi-Fi and into bed. More parents are choosing EE Broadband, the UK's fastest growing broadband provider.
To verify, see ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning to you, 4 minutes after seven on Wednesday the 15th of April. The warning lights are flashing financially as the IMF says that Britain, the United Kingdom, could be heading to a recession, could have the biggest backward step as there's possibly a global recession on the way. Warning lights flashing on defence as a former Labour defence secretary, former boss of NATO, says that we must get a grip on the welfare budget. We are almost clinically unprepared to defend this nation. We'll give you full details on that. Back to the story concerning AR. Remember, that's how we refer to the Southport killer, in deference to the parents of the victims, wishes of the parents' victims. And we spoke a lot about the parents yesterday, the parents of AR. Well, here's Reform spokesman, Reform's UK Treasury spokesman, Robert Jenrick, saying that the parents should be deported. He was speaking on the Daily Tea podcast.
They failed to stop one of the most heinous crimes in modern times. And I think they should now be asked to leave. They should be deported.
Remember this news back in February of last year.
It is my pleasure to bring from His Majesty the King a letter.
Am I supposed to read it right now?
Yeah, please do.
Well, happier times, aren't there? Sir Keir Starmer inviting, obviously, through the King. President Trump, a state visit to the UK. Well, now, of course, the King is going to the US, and it is revealed he will not meet any of the so-called Epstein survivors. We'll give you more details on that story. The government's celebrating that they've closed a number of asylum hotels, which obviously is good news. But the level of closures, it's only 11. We're speaking with a senior member of the government, by the way, later in this hour, on many issues, not least financial issues, and we'll come to that. And if we're talking money... Celine Dion from the track there from Titanic. The first ever sale of a life jacket worn by a Titanic survivor will go on sale with the valuation for a life jacket, £350,000.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
We could all be in need of financial life jackets, as it's reported a further escalation in the Iran conflict could trigger a global recession that would affect the UK more than any of the other G7 nations, so says the IMF, or International Monetary Fund. Against a volatile background, the Washington-based fund says the economic damage from the Middle East conflict was steadily rising as it cuts its growth forecast for 2026. Particularly embarrassing, as the Chancellor is over there at the moment. Just to give you some background before we go to some experts on this, The IMF, for its World Economic Outlook, cuts its estimate for UK growth to 0.8 from 1.3%. So that's 1.3 down to 0.8. For context, the United States drops just 0.1%, 2.4% to 2.3, so virtually nothing. France stays stable at 1%. More on that now. Here's speaking the IMF's Economic Councillor, Pierre-Olivier Gorinchas.
There was a relatively weak performance of the UK economy in the second half of last year, and the way the numbers are computed, there is what we call a carryover, so there is a kind of a shadow effect of that growth into 2026, and that also contributes to a lower growth number overall. But there is an expectation of a rebound in 2027, and growth is expected to be at 1.3%. Now, the impact of the war in the Middle East for the UK is, of course, coming through energy price, and in particular, gas prices. And the UK is highly reliant on gas for its energy mix. Now, a lot of this gas is produced domestically, but there is still a part of it that is imported. And the part that is imported is at market prices. It's much more expensive, and that kind of sets the price for energy in the UK in an environment in which gas reserves are relatively low when you compare them to other European countries. So there is more of a pass-through, if you want, of gas prices into wholesale prices of energy, even if households are protected temporarily because there are some measures in place. So there is an impact of the developments in the Middle East and disruptions in energy markets in the UK.
So what does that mean for you and for me? Let's turn to Simon French, who's chief economist at the investment bank Panmure Liberum, formerly an economist at the Cabinet Office and the Department of Work and Pensions. To keep the Titanic metaphor going, Simon, do we all have to race for the lifeboats? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, this is a pretty stark warning, isn't it, from the International Monetary Fund, that the UK is lacking in resilience, particularly in its energy markets. And I think some of the comments you've just played there around the lack of gas storage, the lack of domestic supply, will hit home for the because those are choices that this government has made. Yes, there are international factors that always affect. It affected the previous government, it affected this government. But domestic choices over energy policy was one of the big driving forces why the UK saw the biggest reduction in its growth forecast for this year. And you contrasted, didn't you, with the US downgrade, which is just 0.1% percentage points. Why is that? Because the US is entirely energy self-sufficient. So yes, there's a redistribution from state to state, but there isn't a big aggregate hit to the US economy.
Hearing these warnings, what actions should a Chancellor take?
Well, I think it's worth saying that just building on the gas story, the gas price has pulled back quite a long way since its peak about 10 days ago. And so the Chancellor, who has said, look, let's wait and see, because energy prices can move and are very volatile, and therefore the case for intervention may change week to week, is possibly a little bit vindicated by that. I'll give you some data points. Cornwall Insight, who provide the pretty regular estimate of the energy price cap that a lot of your listeners will pay from July, that was expected to go up to almost £2,000 as recently as 2 weeks ago. It's actually down about £100 from that level, given how volatile wholesale gas prices. So I think from the Chancellor's standpoint, she continues her wait-and-see approach as to whether she intervenes with household energy costs, but she does need to get on the phone to her energy secretary and use some pretty fruity language about UK energy policy, because it is just, it's not attracting jealous looks from the rest of the world, it's attracting sympathetic looks, because we look like an outlier at a time when other major economies are taking a much more pragmatic approach to energy, given events in the Gulf.
Simon, lastly, whenever we do a story, we always think of the listener, Mrs. Jones in Clapham, as it were. What does it mean for her? When will she start to feel the pressures, and how?
Well, she's already, if she's filling up her car, is seeing those pressures. The average cost of a litre of fuel, about £1.50, has started the conflict about £1.30. But there are two more effects to come. I talked about the energy price cap from the 1st of July. And then later in the year, it all depends on whether businesses hold the line and say, actually, we can absorb some of these costs or pass it on. That is when she might feel some second order impacts on the cost of building, the cost of her weekly shop, etc.
Really enjoyed, as ever, your time. Thanks, Simon French, Chief Economist at the Investment Bank Panmure Liberum, 11 minutes after 7. Let's get more economic wisdom and then come over to your views. Let's turn to Liam Halligan, who's a journalist, economist and columnist, with The Telegraph, joining me now. Good to have you on, Liam. How embarrassing for the Chancellor. She finds herself in Washington as the IMF issues this, I can only call it, this red light warning. Liam, good morning.
Good to be with you, Nick. Yeah, these are just economic forecasts, but they're very, very important economic forecasts. The IMF's pretty much the most important and influential global financial watchdog there is out there. And what the IMF is saying is, while we grew at 1.4% in 2025, 1.4% GDP growth, the economy felt pretty sluggish. This year, rather than growing at 1.3%, as the IMF was saying in January, their forecast is now 0.8%. Now, that's about middle of the pack in terms of the G7 average. But if you look at the per capita growth, that is growth per head, that's what really impacts people's lives, then growth is just 0.2% this year, according to the IMF, which is easily the lowest in the G7. That's because we're particularly vulnerable to this war in the Middle East. We're a major importer, not only of energy, we're also a major importer of food. And it's not just energy that comes through those Straits of Hormuz, oil and gas. It's also fertilizer that comes through the Straits of Hormuz. There's going to be, I'm afraid, an increase in food prices globally because of that, and particularly in the UK, because we are a food importer. We are particularly vulnerable. That's what the IMF, unfortunately, is highlighting, whether Rachel Reeves is in Washington or not.
What are the levers she could pull? What are the levers she should pull, Liam?
Well, I think the levers that she could pull is she needs to get the economy growing. She needs to deregulate. She needs to give businesses a chance to start investing, to start employing. Unemployment's also creeping up. But I'm afraid that's just not in her nature, or the nature, I'm afraid, of this Labour Party. I think we're going to have a lot more fiscal weakness. What does that mean? The government's going to get less tax revenue in because there's less growth. They're going to spend more money on benefits because there's less growth. And how are Labour going to respond to that? They're just going to increase the tax rates even more. And the danger is that that could lead to a downward spiral where higher tax rates lead to even lower, slower growth, leads to bigger holes in the public finances, which leads to higher tax. I'm afraid this Labour government, since they've been in, they're the instincts that they've shown. Whenever there's a problem, they think that the solution's more government spending, which means yet more tax.
Lastly, Liam, coming back to this, it was around 20 months ago, this was a government that was elected on a promise for growth. What's happened? The growth is going backwards, Liam.
It's certainly true to say there have been global headwinds, and these global headwinds from war in the Middle East are absolutely huge. But it's also true to say, I think, that Labour's instincts have been the wrong way round. They're not encouraging growth. They're just lathering ever more regulation and tax on the economy. And we can all feel that. They've been unlucky with the inheritance they had from the Tories. It certainly wasn't like Tony Blair's inheritance of a pretty strong economy in 1997. But I'm afraid Labour, with the best will in the world, have made a bad situation worse.
Finally, actually, final question. Given all of this and the fact, as you rightly point out, we are such a mass importer, much as Iran has a chokehold on the Strait of Hormuz, it seems Ed Miliband has a chokehold on this government. Should we now drill in the North Sea? Liam.
It's been clear for many, many months and years, Nick. Some people in the Labour Party will say, oh, but there's no oil and gas in the North Sea. There's certainly lots and lots of oil and gas in the North Sea. It's not the fact that the oil and gas isn't there. It's politics and policy that's making the oil and gas economically unviable. If you tax the oil and gas companies at almost 80%, then those wells become unviable. If you lower the tax rates, then it makes economic sense to get that oil and gas out the ground. And we need it. The IMF's saying we need it. The whole world's saying we need it. But it seems that Ed Miliband and that faction of the Labour Party is holding back Britain's ability to extract its own energy to give some relief to hard-pressed firms and households.
Liam, thanks. Look after yourself. Good speaking with you. Liam Halligan is an economist and Telegraph columnist. We'll come to your views on that. We're going to take yet more financial pressure. And if we're talking about financial need and requirements, we cannot defend Britain with an ever-expanding welfare bill. The words of a former Labour politician, indeed Defence Secretary, George, now Lord Robertson.
Lip service is paid to the risks, the threats, the bright red signals of danger. But even the promised national conversation about defence can't be started.
Yeah, the former Defence Secretary really launching a torpedo at Sir Keir Starmer and his government. We'll have more on that. Just turned 7:17. LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, will hold talks with her US counterpart in Washington later after she said she's very angry that the US went to war with Iran without an exit plan. It's understood the heads of the Army, Navy and Royal Air Force will meet later this week to discuss funding pressures on the armed forces. And a state visit by the King and Queen to the US later this month won't include a meeting with survivors of the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. LBC weather, an unsettled and windy day for many. Rain will move eastwards through the UK later, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the North Circular Road westbound to the A10 junction in Edmonton. It's because a lorry has broken down. In Silvertown, there are queues on the Lower Lee crossing westbound from the Silvertown Tunnel to the Aspen Way. It's because of the ongoing works and only one lane is open. In Lewisham, the A20 Loampit Vale is partially blocked westbound at Gerrard Street following an accident, and it's now very slow on the approach. In New Cross, Sanford Street remains closed both ways, and that's also after an accident. The A40 remains closed in both directions between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover. It's because of the ongoing works. And as a result, it's very busy on the M4 eastbound to the elevated section.
This is LBC.
Psst. You. Yeah, you. Listening to the radio. Up to whatever. We just wanted to let you know there's a lotto draw coming up. And
it could be you.
Yeah, what he said. Lotto, from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do is...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
weight loss.
Weight loss?
I... No, forget that.
Never,
you just
keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
I swear by
it. Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Combine your pensions with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket.
Geographical and other restrictions. Min spend £60 and charges apply. Discount available on food, new customers only. Max saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
You know what you're getting with a conference. Laptop backpacks. Security pass lanyard.
If you could just pop this on.
Being asked, how was your journey in?
How was your journey in?
An array of triangular sandwiches. Having to deal with a small crisis back at the office. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a great night's sleep and a tasty breakfast. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:20, come to your reaction to that financial warning for the Chancellor, who finds herself in Washington as the IMF, which is based in Washington, leads that very stark warning. Just as ever, context is everything. So what does it mean when we hear that the United Kingdom, the UK's forecast for economic growth drops from 1.3 to 0.8? Now, the whole world obviously could be affected by the recession, but look at this. For the United States, they drop just from 2.4 to 2.3%. And France remains fixed at 1% in the view of the IMF. The United Kingdom, therefore, takes a pretty chunky 0.5% hit, 1.3 down to 0.8. This is front page news for a couple of your newspapers. The I, UK economy takes triple hit from Iran war. The Guardian also goes with this. Iran conflict could spark recession. Britain hit the hardest, says IMF. The other big story, and we are coming to that, I promise you. In fact, we're going to start our coverage of that in just a few minutes' time, actually, is the warning from former Labour Defence Secretary, George, now Lord Robertson, quotes, and it's the quote that they put on the front page of the Daily Mail, "We cannot defend Britain with an ever-expanding welfare bill." Really is embarrassing when you consider this was the man that was chosen by the government to look at the what's called SDR, Spending Defence Review. This is the front page of others of your newspapers as well. Lastly, if we're talking money, let's talk about the front page of The Sun, and we'll be giving you more details on this in around 10 minutes or so time. Never mind who wants to be a billionaire, who wants to be a billionaire? Yes, you did hear that correctly. An extraordinary £1 billion plus prize is up for grabs in one of two new games unveiled by lottery bosses yesterday, and we'll have more details on that in about, as I say, around 10 minutes. So what are you saying about the financial concerns? This goes to the social media for some of your views. This comes in from Steve. How long will it take us to realise the reason that France has stayed the same, the reason that the US has hardly been touched? They both have interior energy policies that can sustain itself. Nuclear in France, shale gas in the US. It's this zero madness is killing us in the UK. Well, as I said, I think it was with Liam Halligan, I was just discussing, just as Iran has a seemingly chokehold on the Strait of Hormuz, Ed Miliband, I don't know what he's got on the Prime Minister or the rest of them. He seems to have a chokehold. We are not allowed to drill, baby, drill. Same subject, Lee in Oxford. Rachel Reeves needs to give businesses a chance. They seem to hate businesses. It's really bizarre. Tony picks up on the idea of energy as well. The UK is vulnerable due to relying on imports of expensive oil and gas. Net zero policies have destroyed the UK. 7:23. Now, I did touch on that other big story, and it really was an extraordinary intervention by the former Secretary General of NATO, former Defence Secretary, senior Labour politician George, now Lord Robertson, effectively issuing this warning as regards defence spending.
Lip service is paid to the risks, the threats, the bright red signals of danger. But even the promised national conversation about defence can't be started. The cold reality of today's dangerous world is that we cannot defend Britain with an ever-expanding welfare budget.
Before I turn to an expert, what makes this so key is he, Lord Robertson, was the man chosen by the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, to lead this supposed SDR, Strategic Defence Review. So that is the level of trust in which the Prime Minister places Lord Robertson. Enough from me. Let's turn to an expert. John Foreman, former British defence attaché to Moscow and served in Kyiv as well, and was a Royal Navy captain commanding two warships, which, sadly now, is probably about the size of the fleet. The captain joins me now. Good to have you on board, sir. Thank you. This is quite an intervention. How did you react when you either heard it last night or this morning? Good morning.
Well, good morning, Nick. I think it's, as you said, it's massive. I was speaking to some insiders yesterday who said they can't remember a time when such a sort of grandee of the Labour Party or the Conservative Party has weighed in. So I think it's overdue. I think it was very blunt. I think he put it away in language which hopefully will cut through to the public. And it's born, I think, born of deep frustration with Labour Party's drift and complacency over the last 2 years on defence.
Is it just the Labour Party, Captain? Should we also be looking at quite a number of years, 14 years of Conservative lack of budget as well?
Well, I think last time I was on, we were speaking about the parlous state of the Royal Navy. And I think failure has many masters, just as success does. And if we go back basically till the 1990s, when Great Britain and many allies decided to take a strategic holiday from risk, we underinvested in defence. We spent on social spending rather than defence. We had two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So I think, you know, and I see finger pointing at the Parliament between various, who's to blame, between various parties, they're all to blame. And I think Robertson was trying to say is that, you know, if we got ourselves in this position, this shouldn't just be a party political issue, it should be a national issue, a serious conversation about defence and what's the right balance between defending ourselves, like peace and prosperity and welfare. And I think I'm not sure whether that's actually going to work or whether it just falls on deaf ears within the current government.
So you're a military bloke. How do we fight our way out of this?
Well, I mean, I think we have to spend more money. I was interested. I was looking at the YouGov yesterday. Other polling companies are available, which said that defence as an issue has ticked up dramatically in the last 3 months. I mean, after Venezuela, in particular Iran. So it used to bubble around about 18% on the list of key issues. Now it's about 30%. And that hasn't been met by sort of government sort of contemplation and consideration. The government's got a target of 3% of GDP and maybe to go to 3.5%, which is a crude measure. And we also need to get the model to do better, but we need to spend more money. And unfortunately, I think you're seeing in Robertson's comments a sign of political discord inside the Labour Party. You have the sort of rightist party, the Coopers, the Healy's, the Streetings, perhaps Mahmood, so let's spend some more money on defence, versus the Reeves, Miliband, Phillipson, who say, no, our mission here, the Labour Party, is to, you know, spend more money on our core constituency. And we don't know where the Prime Minister is. So I think really what it requires is political leadership from the First Lord of the Treasury, i.e. the Prime Minister, to back up his previous warm words with action and actually up the budget and publish this much-delayed plan, which actually gives confidence and reassurance to the people who are serving inside the armed forces.
Just lastly, remind me, John, the timeline of that plan. How long has it been sitting on whatever desk it's sitting on?
Well, the problem is that the Strategic Defence Review came up with lots of priorities and they weren't funded and were costed properly. So then they were all tossed over to this new defence investment plan, and that's been waiting. We've been waiting that since last autumn. And now it's probably going to be May, June at latest. But John Healy, in a rather banal and unimpressive performance on Friday, couldn't give a timeline. So we don't really know when the plan's going to be published, and we don't really know what the funding profile is for defence over the next 5 to 10 years. So it's all a bit of a mess, to be honest.
Grateful for your time as ever. Thanks very much. John Foreman served as British defence attaché to Moscow and Kyiv and as a Royal Navy captain, 728. Let's talk the economy. We're going to talk defence. I promise you we're going to give that more detail to you in that in the next hour. Let's get Susan in Tolworth on the line now to talk about the economy. Your take on what we're hearing as regards those economic indicators. Susan, good morning.
Good morning, dear. I'm going to say this to you because I'm old. But
right.
Back in when the Labour Party were in power, everybody forgets this. Gord Brown left a letter saying there was no money in the kitty.
No, Liam Byrne. Thank you. It was Liam Byrne. It wasn't Gordon. But anyway, go on. Yes, they said there's no money in the kitty. And I remember David Cameron getting that out in a subsequent general election. Go ahead. Yep.
But every time they're in, They destroy this country. They've got no care about business. They can't live on air. We need money to support our society.
Well, they say, and there's, as John Foreman just said, there's a whole wing of the Labour Party that say they need money to continue and to increase benefit spending. Meanwhile, our defence is parlous. It doesn't add up to me. Susan?
Well, with defence, and I've got to say this, Margaret Thatcher was in power, and when she was in, we had all defence companies round where I live, in the end of London, and we had aerospace.
Yes, British
and
aerospace.
They got rid of all of it. And I said to my husband at the time, we both lost our jobs. I said, you need defence, I said, for your country. And they just didn't care less.
Susan, thanks for getting us started. We will. Thank you very much, Susan. Have a good day. We will be taking that defence conversation on later in the show. Coming up after the news, staying with financial matters. Celine Dion with the theme, of course, from Titanic. As the only life jacket from the Titanic ever to go on sale at auction is predicted to go for £350,000. We'll have more on that. And
this Saturday, it's the second anniversary of the National Lottery with an estimated super draw jackpot of £20 million. It could be you.
Give me a break, how we've moved on. Who wants to be a billionaire? That's right, a £1 billion plus prize up from the lottery. More on that in a few minutes' time. 7.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. News time, Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor has criticised what she calls the folly of America's decision to go to war with Iran without an exit plan. Rachel Reeves' comments come after the IMF's stark forecast predicting Britain will be hit the hardest by the conflict's economic fallout. It's understood the heads of the Army, Navy and Royal Air Force will meet this week to discuss funding pressures on the armed forces. It follows a warning from a former head of NATO that a lack of defence spending has left the UK in peril. And a state visit by the King and Queen to the US later this month won't include a meeting with survivors of the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Buckingham Palace sources say they don't want to risk jeopardising any legal action that could bring justice. LBC weather, an unsettled and windy day for many. Rain moving eastward through the UK, a high of 17 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
How many times do we have to sit and listen to another report or inquiry that says the multi-agency that all failed, all passed the buck, thought, no, it doesn't quite fall under our remit. But I'm sorry, multiple occasions when this kid is turning up at school with a knife and the police don't seem to do anything. They didn't even arrest him. They found him on a bus with a knife, didn't arrest him. Forget it. And nothing will really change.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
I've just had a thought. My home needs to feel less student with one teaspoon and more a home that actually feels like me.
Sounds like a job for Wayfair.
Exactly. I'm thinking of that one statement piece that changes the whole room, or maybe just those perfect finishing touches that pull it all together.
With furniture and decor for every style and budget, Wayfair turns your home dreams into reality. So why wait to create the home you really love? Get it out of your head and into your home. Download the Wayfair app.
Dreaming of a getaway? With P&O Cruises, you can wake up to a new paradise every day. And with new all-inclusive packages now making a splash, why not go all in and get even more out of your next holiday?
P&O Cruises. Holiday like never before.
Limited availability on all-inclusive packages.
It's hard to concentrate when you're worried about your health. It can feel like there's a wall between you and the rest of the world. Like you can't be fully present.
Hello, AXA Health. How can I help?
At AXA Health Insurance, we build our teams with people who care. So when you need us, we're here to support you. For cover that cares, search AXA Health Insurance. Pre-existing conditions are not covered.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
7:33. Money, money, money. It does seem to be dominating our conversation, doesn't it? Those grim warnings from the IMF and a grim warning from the former Labour Defence Secretary. Stop spending on the level you are in benefits. Start spending on defence. We'll have more on that in a moment. But if we're talking money, let's get Kathleen Brooks. She knows a few things about money. She's a financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB. And you and I better sign up for the National Lottery, hadn't we, to be billionaires. Good morning to you, Kathleen.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, the good news story of the morning. We all could be billionaires, wow. Nick, because the lottery is launching two new games. So for £4 a ticket, you get a chance, obviously, at winning these mega jackpots, because we're going to get a chance to play a UK-specific version of the US Powerball. So that's the world's largest rolling jackpot. So UK players, they're going to compete with their US counterparts for a part of this money. And the lucky winner, they get paid out over 30 years. I mean, it just sounds brilliant, to be quite honest. And it's worth noting that the biggest win in the US was $2.2 billion. And I think that was back in 2023.
My goodness. This is what you could buy, courtesy of The Sun. If you won £1 billion, you could buy the Caribbean island, such as St. Kitts and Nevis, or Nevis.
It's not bad.
Or you could buy the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and still have millions in change. What are you going to go for first, Kathleen?
Oh, I think the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium would be good, because you could rent it out. It could be an asset, couldn't
it?
You're making more money.
I've not seen football there. I think I saw American football or baseball. It was fantastic. It really is.
It is. I've seen concerts there. It's wonderful.
And you'd have enough to buy a life jacket, Kathleen.
Oh, you would. You would. But you would only be able to buy one of those. So, yes, Titanic life jacket. One is up for auction. This is literally a one-off event.
Is,
so it's going to be auctioned in Wiltshire on Saturday.
Where else but Wiltshire if it's the Titanic?
Where else, of course. That famous tone. This actually...
well-known seafaring county.
Exactly. That inland town.
Yeah.
It's the 114th anniversary of the tragedy. But yes, they're marking events in Southampton, obviously.
Right.
But they are having this auction in Wiltshire. So yes, it's from the life jacket itself is from a first class passenger. Her name was Laura Mabel Francatelli.
Right.
And she was one of only 700 survivors. But these life jackets, they have never come up for auction before. And we know that there's a lot of people around the world who are huge Titanic fans, and they collect the memorabilia. So this is going to be a big one. And the range is between £250,000 and £350,000.
Wow.
So whoever gets it will have to pay up for it.
Can I just say I love the name Mabel? Why did Mabel go out of fashion? That's a great woman's first name. We love it. Finally, you agree, yes?
Yes, I completely agree.
Yeah. Front page news for The Telegraph is about The Telegraph. What's happened over there, Kathleen?
Yeah, so Axel Springer, the German news publisher, is going to be able to buy The Telegraph for £575 million. So they were, Lisa Nandy, the culture secretary, she approved the deal on behalf of the government, said that she wasn't minded to put it through the regulators to check for competition rules. Obviously, Axel Springer is absolutely huge. If you haven't heard of them, you might have heard of some of the publications that they own, which includes Politico and Business Insider. They tend to have kind of centrist conservative values, but it's actually run by a journalist. So I think that, you know, the journalist, this has been an ongoing saga. Back in 2023, the Barclay brothers, their debts kind of caught up with them, and Lloyd's Bank was actually running, that was essentially the owner of the Telegraph for a little while. And then some UAE backers, backers from the Gulf, they had paid off the Barclay brothers' debt. So essentially Axel Springer had to, you know, pay the UAE for the Telegraph, but it's run by a journalist. It has quite strong journalistic values. Centrist conservative, very linked to the Telegraph, what the Telegraph stands for anyway. So I think this will be seen as being the absolute best outcome certainly in the Telegraph today. They're going to be very happy about that.
Yeah.
And they said that they'll invest heavily in editorial and in international growth. So watch this space for the Telegraph.
Good luck to them and all the journalists over there. Kathleen Brooks, financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB, pointing out Axel Springer. The company is run by a journalist. What could go wrong? Do you remember when this country was run by a former Telegraph journalist, Boris Johnson? What could possibly go wrong if things are run by a journalist? 7:38 is the time. Let's come back to our conversation about the economy and defence spending as well. Tony's in Fareham. Tony, which aspect do you want to go on, defence or our economic indicators? Good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. Hope you're well, sir. Yes, defence, please. My view is that just to alleviate the expenditure, or to ease the expenditure, that we have closer cooperation with our European allies.
Well, that's called NATO, isn't it? Isn't that called NATO, sir?
Yeah, they are, yes. But, I mean, a German soldier has a different weapon than a British soldier. A Finnish soldier will have a different weapon system than us.
Right.
So my view is to standardise the weapon system so that if a German picks up a British rifle, he has the same ammunition, knows how to operate it, etc.
Why does that... As long as he or she can fire a gun correctly, what does it matter if it's a Glock or a, I don't know, many other gun manufacturers, but what does it matter what sort of gun it is?
Because if
why does it, I don't get it, sorry, I'm missing the point here, I'm sure.
If you manufacture half a million weapons to equip the British Army, then you it would be cheaper to manufacture 5 million weapons to equip a European army. And I think that we need to move closer to Europe, depending on, considering what's happening in America. And secondly, if I may, we need to have much closer cooperation with drones.
With who? Sorry, with?
With drones.
Drones. Sorry, yeah, go on. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Because obviously with everything that's happening in Ukraine has taught us one thing, that the next war will be fought remotely with, mainly remotely with drones, and those sort of weapons.
I think you're right. I'm staggered we don't use drones more as regards our border enforcement as well, particularly with what goes on at Calais and other French coastal towns. Tony, thank you. Glyn, you'll be the next caller on that. 7:40 is the time. Let's go to other matters. And as we know, you can actually count down in days now. It's from the visit from King Charles to Washington. He'll be going to Washington, New York and Virginia. King Charles and Queen Camilla will be informally welcomed by President Trump and his wife Melania with a private tea, followed by a large party with guests from both the British and the US communities. The visit will include meetings between the Queen and domestic and sexual abuse survivors, despite royal aides turning down a request for the King to speak with some of the victims of Jeffrey Epstein. Let's turn to Alexander Larman, who's a journalist and wrote Lazarus and Windsors at War, and joins me now. Was it ever likely that either the King or the Queen would actually come to face-to-face with these victims, Alexander, in your view? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I think that it's actually something that wasn't very likely, because obviously there's been great emotive pressure that the King and Queen should meet Epstein's victims. But there's two separate reasons why they're not going to. The first reason is obviously it's a very, very tightly packed schedule. Every single minute has to be very closely accounted for. But the second reason, I think, is that the palace have made a statement which I believe is sincere when they say that they simply do not want to be getting involved in anything like this before justice takes its course. Now, of course, the difficulty is always going to be that you could take the argument, well, what justice? Because Epstein is dead. He's, you know, he is beyond any kind of prosecution on this world. But then on the other hand, it's all about optics, isn't it? And the optics are, should the King and Queen be seen to be allying themselves with Epstein's victims? And of course, the question that this arises from is, would this in turn affect Andrew Mountbatten Windsor? Because obviously he is a man who's been, he consorted with Epstein. He's obviously very much the man of the moment when it comes to these things. And so it might be seen that if the King and Queen meet Epstein's victims, they would be seen as implicitly offering further commentary on Andrew. That's the last thing we want to be doing at this moment.
What will be happening within the corridors of power, Alexander, as regards the choreography of this visit? Because we're, what, I think about 12 days away. Lord only knows what Donald Trump will do within the next 12 days. It's difficult to predict within the next 12 minutes. There must be a degree of nervousness.
I think there's enormous nervousness, because obviously we are in this very febrile international situation. And of course, a lot of people have been saying the state visit shouldn't go ahead. But I think that the King and Queen are adamant it should. Donald Trump is adamant that it should. And everybody in either camp believes that it's absolutely vital that it should. So you've got a fairly packed schedule. I mean, the events with Trump are going to be ceremonial. There's going to be a tea party. There'll be a state dinner. Charles is going to be addressing both houses of Congress out there and stuff like that. So it's not expected this is going to be a big political breakthrough in terms of anything that happens. It's going to be very much a kind of a ceremonial event. It's going to be something that's going to be symbolic rather than going to be diplomatic. But the soft power of the British monarchy cannot be underestimated. And I suspect that everybody is going to be hoping that after Donald Trump's state visit to Britain last year was very successful, it's going to be a real hope that this is going to smooth waters and actually, to a large extent, reset the special relationship.
Well, you've almost answered my final question, but I'm going to come with it anyway. My last question, Alexander, what does success look like for the King and the Queen in this visit?
Well, to be honest with you, Nick, I mean, success means nothing going wrong, because it is a difficult time, and it is something that there would have been people saying, do we really have to do this right now? Can't we postpone until some more apposite time? But, of course, the thing is with Donald Trump is there's no such thing as an apposite time. There's always going to be some controversy, some new event lurking in the background. So, to be honest with you, if not now, then when?
Alexander Larman is a journalist and author of Lazarus and Windsors at War. Thank you for your time. We'll continue our conversation concerning defence spending. Glyn, you will be the next caller on that. But coming back to the issue of money, Rachel Reeves speaking as Shadow Chancellor.
I know how to run a successful economy. I just want the chance to be able to do that and turn this economy around so that it actually works for working people in our country again.
I think that's worth hearing again.
I know how to run a successful economy. I just want the chance to be able to do that and turn this economy around so that it actually works for working people in our country again.
How's it going, Chancellor? Well, we can't ask her, but her effective deputy, James Murray, will join us after the news. 7.45, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, will hold talks with her counterpart in Washington later after saying that she's very angry the US went to war with Iran without an exit plan. The government's under pressure to support a Lord's proposed ban on social media for under-16s ahead of a vote later. And the competition watchdog has ordered the AA and BSM driving schools to repay more than £760,000 to customers over a practice known as drip pricing. LBC weather, an unsettled and windy day for many. Rain moving eastwards through the UK, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Another lorry's broken down on the M25 clockwise at Junction 6 at Godston. This is the second one this morning. One lane is closed again for recovery and there are delays back to the Clackett Lane services. Severe delays on the A12 southbound heading down towards the A13 junction. And that's because of some emergency repair works and there are delays all the way back to Bromley by Bow. Also on the A12, it's very busy southbound to Junction 18 at Danbury. There's a load of debris across the road. In Lewisham, Lone Pit Vale, the A20 remains partially blocked westbound after an accident. And in New Cross, Sanford Street remains closed in both directions because of an ongoing investigation.
LBC.
Maria wasn't mastering the art of macaron in Paris by accident. She booked a baking class on Get Your Guide. Fate didn't have the Brooks sipping matcha with a real tea master in Tokyo. They booked that on Get Your Guide too. And luck didn't have John learning the difference between bow and stern on a Majorcan boat cruise. You guessed it, Get Your Guide. The best parts of travel don't just happen. You make them happen when you book your tours, tickets and activities on the Get Your Guide app.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket.
Geographical and other restrictions. Min spend £60 on charges apply. Discount available on food. New customers only. Max saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
Hello, beautiful people! Get ready to rock with a new Volkswagen T-Roc. With £2,000 towards your finance deposit on the new Volkswagen T-Roc with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Test drive the T-Roc today and see why it won What Car's Best Small SUV Award. Order by the 4th of May 2026. Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
You want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
weight loss?
I know, forget that. You just have to
keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
I swear.
Advice.
Or
You could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to €100,000 per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app. The XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
7:49. Well, with the words of defence and spending on everyone's lips, let's bring into the conversation Labour MP and Chief Secretary of the Treasury, who's going to be talking about some defence spending, but going the way of Ukraine. James Murray joins us now. Thanks for coming on, Chief Secretary. What is it that you and your colleagues are announcing this morning? Good morning to you.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. So the Chancellor is in Washington at the moment at meetings with the IMF and other people from governments around the world. And one of the announcements she's making there is to confirm the third tranche of money going to Ukraine as part of the loan that we're making to them. This helps them to buy the military equipment they need and really underscores the support that we continue to have for Ukraine in their fight against Russia, because that's really important, not just for Ukraine, but also for our security interests as well.
The military equipment that they need. What about the military equipment that we need, Chief Secretary? When are we going to get that?
Yeah, well, look, we're already making contracts in the UK. We've signed about 1,000 contracts since we came to office. Let me give you a few examples of things we're investing in right now, decisions we've taken in recent months. £1 billion in new helicopters. That actually supports around 70 companies around the UK in supplying those helicopters. £9 billion in the nuclear reactors on submarines. There's a new scheme called Atlantic Bastion, which is about hunting enemy submarines in the Atlantic. £1.5 billion in munitions, new production of interceptor drones. So there's a lot of investment that we're already making in our military capability. At the same time, we're finalising our defence investment plan, which will be our blueprint for the next 10 years.
When will we hear that defence investment plan?
Well, that will come out as soon as possible, because we want to get it right.
What does that mean, as soon as possible, Chief? Because we had the SDR, the Strategic Defence Review, which then gave us the defence investment plan. When will we actually see it? When will these plans actually be published?
Yeah, so look, the defence investment plan, Nick, is going to be a 10-year blueprint. So it's a transformation of 10 years. So yes, it's important that we learn the lessons from both Ukraine and what's happening in the Middle East, and we get it right. But it's in a really important context, Nick, which is of the biggest sustained increase in defence spending since the Cold War. Now, you might remember that we came into the election with a manifesto that said that in this Parliament we would set out a path towards 2.5% of GDP being spent on defence. Because of decisions the Chancellor has taken, you know, with the Prime Minister, we're going to be hitting 2.6%, so exceeding that target, from April next year in a fully funded way. So we are making sure that money is there for defence, but it's important we spend it in the right way, which is why it's so important to get the defence investment plan right.
We have to talk about the comments of a former Labour Defence Secretary, somebody you certainly will know of, you probably know well. I speak of Lord Robertson, who says, and I quote, "We cannot defend Britain with an ever-expanding welfare bill." He also speaks of a corrosive complacency with the government. How do you react?
Well, look, I've got a lot of respect for Lord Robertson.
So you agree
with him? I would say, I fundamentally disagree with him. And actually, I think it's not just me. The first Sea Lord, I think, was speaking in Parliament this week, and he said he's seen no complacency amongst all the people that he works with. You know, we're taking it incredibly seriously, which is why we want to get the defence investment plan right. You know, we've identified the money, as I said, hitting 2.6% of GDP next year, the biggest sustained increase in defence investment since the Cold War.
But we can't muster a warship to go to Cyprus. Where is HMS Dragon at the moment?
I believe HMS Dragon is there in the Mediterranean.
It's still tied up, Chief Secretary. It's okay. Having repairs water facilities.
Okay, I'll take your word for it, Nick.
So the one time we need to deploy a battleship or a warship, whatever you want to call it, we can't do it, Chief Secretary. That is the reality. Lord Robertson is right. I appreciate you inherited 14 years. You've done precious little to reverse that, haven't
you? No, that's not true. Look, even Ben Wallace, former Tory Defence Secretary, says that under his government, the armed forces were hollowed out. We have committed to increasing that investment in defence spending. As I said, 2.6% of GDP by next April, the biggest sustained increase since the Cold War. All of that is really critical to making sure we're ready for the future. But we need to spend it in the right way. And that's why, as well as getting on with the investments right now in helicopters, in submarines and in munitions and everything I've listed before, it's important we get the defence investment plan right.
But, Mr. Murray, the words come from George Robertson, Lord Robertson, who was a Labour Defence Secretary, who was Secretary General of NATO, and was chosen by your boss, the Prime Minister Keir Starmer, to look at the strategic spending review. This is him saying that.
Yeah, and Nick, I've got a lot of respect for him, but on this we just disagree. Because if you look at the decisions that we've taken about increasing defence spending, as I said, to the record levels, highest increase since the Cold War, we are putting money there to invest in defence. It is important we get the defence investment plan right, because it will be the blueprint for transformation over the next 10 years.
How embarrassing is this for you? Not you personally, for the government. Have a former Labour Defence Secretary, the boss of NATO, the man hired by Sir Keir to look at defence spending, saying that there is a corrosive complacence. This is beyond embarrassing, isn't
But, Nick, it's not about what someone says on any particular day. It's about getting the plan for the next 10 years right. This is the defence investment plan is a 10-year transformation plan.
This is the former boss of NATO,
Mr. Murray. But, Nick, the point is, we need to get the plan right.
Surely he knows when it comes to defence.
He was
a defence secretary, he ran NATO, and he's called you and your mob corrosive complacency. That's the reality.
And Nick, as I said, the first Sea Lord was at the in Parliament this week and said he's seen no such complacency in all of his interactions. But look, the important thing here is not to, say someone said X or Y on any particular day. It's about getting the plan right for the next 10 years. Whilst making the point again, Nick, because it's an important one, but whilst we're having this conversation about the Defence Investment Plan, which is a critical plan to set out what we're doing over the next 10 years, we're not sitting on our hands. You know, we're getting on with these new helicopters, the new nuclear reactors for submarines, the new submarine hunting capabilities in the Atlantic.
Then why do we need the French to help us patrol the English Channel, the so-called Shadow Fleet? Why do we have to rely on the French?
Well, because we work with allies.
But why haven't we got our own ships?
Nick, we're part of NATO. We work with allies. You know that. You know that we work with allies, and actually our allies are really important. We're part of NATO, and you know I would come on at your show any day of the week and defend NATO, unlike members of some opposition parties who would have us leave.
Let's talk a little bit. You talked about how the Labour Party came into the election, came into the, with the manifesto talking about defence spending. You also promised, of course, that we would have growth. And we hear now from the IMF that our growth forecast has been cut by 0.5%. Why? What's gone wrong?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what this underscores for me, Nick, which is that this is not our war in the Middle East. It's a war that we said we weren't going to get involved in, but it is having an impact on us and our economy.
Well, hold on. The US, whose war it is, they're going to drop by 0.1%. We're going to drop by 0.5%. Why are we taking it even worse than the United States?
Well, let me say two things. You know, firstly, if you look at what independent market analysts are saying, they are saying that we are better prepared going into this crisis than we were to previous crises like in Ukraine. So we are better prepared now than we were a few years ago, thanks to decisions that we've taken, the Chancellor has taken, increasing economic fiscal headroom and so on. But what it underlines for me is the importance of the work we've been doing and are continuing to do to improve our energy independence, to make sure we have greater homegrown energy and greater energy security, and also to make sure we have economic security. So everything we've been doing about being fiscally responsible, increasing headroom in the public finances, all of that means we'll be better prepared for shocks in the future. And one final point, Nick, if I may.
Of course.
If you look at what the IMF figures say, next year we go up again, and we're then the fastest growing European economy in the G7. So over the 2-year period, we're the fastest growing European economy in the G7. And so that's important context for these figures.
Can you explain to my listeners what appears to be the stranglehold that your colleague Ed Miliband has on this government? You'll be aware that the defence budget is in the region of around £60 to £65 billion. We now hear that the government will invest £50 billion in various net zero projects. Why are we spending almost as much on net zero as we are on defending the realm?
Well, one of the critical reasons why we're spending money on new energy sources is for the energy independence that I was talking about just a few moments ago. You know, one of the reasons...
You can't fill your car or van up with solar or wind power, Chief Secretary, can you?
Yeah, but if you have an electric one, you can charge it. That's the point. We've got to make... We're making this transition towards...
There aren't charging points, Chief Secretary.
We're making a transition in terms of our energy supply. And actually, if you look at what's happening right now in the Middle East, what this reminds us is that when we are tied to oil and gas prices, which are set internationally, which we don't have control over, that puts our economy on, you know, in a less stable position than if we had energy independence. So that's why the energy independence, investing in new nuclear power stations alongside the wind and solar, is so important.
When I speak with your colleague Pat McFadden, we talk about how it's important that people are encouraged back into work. But Chief Secretary, 1,000 new claimants sign on for disability benefits each week, and the number claiming health-related inactivity benefits is rising 10 times faster than that of the working-age population. Again, you've had 20-odd months. What are you, what is your government doing about that?
Yeah, well, in the first 20 months, we started our work of reforming the welfare system, changing the universal credit system to make sure people get back into work, changing motability to reduce some of the elements of that, reducing fraud and error. All of that is some of the first things we've done about reforming the welfare system. But I'd be the first to acknowledge, as would Pat, that there's a lot more we want to do on welfare.
But there's only 1.5 million, Chief Secretary, since your party came into power. You're going backwards.
Well, we started our work, but there's a lot more to do. Of course there's lot more to do.
But you're not even making progress.
Nick, we know there's a huge amount to do to turn around the broken welfare system that we inherited. And one of the top priorities, I know for Pat and for myself and for others of us in government, is about young people. Because at the moment, there is around 1 million young people who are not working or not even education and training. If young people go on to benefits at a young age, there's a real risk they then stay on benefits for a lot of their life. So actually, if we can get young people into work at an early age, that's better for them because they will have a better life when they're able to work if they can get a job, and it's better for the economy and it helps bring the welfare bill down.
Let's finish with a totally different story and the events we're learning from the Southport inquiry, which is conducted by the former High Court judge. And the view of Robert Jenrick, a senior member of Reform UK, that the action taken about the parents of AI, won't give his name as I know you know that the parents of the victims would rather their children remember, but that the parents of the killer should be deported. Is that something you would support?
I don't know the details of that request, Nick.
Well, they came from Rwanda, and Robert Jenrick is suggesting they're sent back to Rwanda because of their criminal irresponsibility as regards their son, AR.
Look, I don't know. I don't know how that question is going to play out, Nick. What I do know is that the report that we had on Monday was unbearably harrowing and horrific. And you know, there's so many conclusions we can draw from it. I know there's a number of recommendations and, you know, systemic failures over 5 years that we need to address. I think one really important issue, and I know that phase two of the inquiry is going to look at this, is around people who are fixated on violence, even where they don't have, you know, sort of terrorist, motivations or whatever, but where they're fixated on violence, and how do we deal with that? And that is such an important issue for us as a government.
Grateful for your time. James Murray is Chief Secretary of the Treasury, talking about the £752 million as part of the defence for Ukraine, buying military kit. Thank you for your time. 1 minute after eight, LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Chancellor will hold talks with her counterparts in Washington later after saying she's very angry the US went to war with Iran without an exit plan. Rachel Reeves says America's folly means families across Britain are suffering the consequences. Her comments coincide with a stark forecast predicting the UK will be hit the hardest by the conflict's economic fallout. But Chief Secretary to the Treasury, James Murray, has just insisted to Nick the country is prepared to absorb some of the shock.
If you look at what independent market analysts are saying, they are saying that we are better prepared going into this crisis than we were to previous crises like in Ukraine. Thanks to decisions that we've taken, the Chancellor has taken, increasing economic fiscal headroom and so on. But what it underlines for me is the importance of the work we've been doing and are continuing to do to improve our energy independence.
Speaking to Nick, James Murray also refused to put a timeline on when the government will publish its defence investment plan. So Keir Starmer is yet to sign it off, even though it was due to be published last autumn. Yesterday, the former head of NATO, Lord Robertson, warned a lack of investment has left the UK in peril. Former British defence attaché to Moscow, John Foreman, has told Nick such an intervention was overdue.
The problem is that the Strategic Defence Review came up with lots of priorities and they weren't funded. So then they were all tossed over to this new defence investment plan. We've been waiting for that since last autumn. And now it's probably going to be May, June at latest. But John Healey, in a rather banal and unimpressive performance on Friday, couldn't give a timeline. So we don't really know what the funding profile is for defence over the next 5 to 10 years.
The US state visit by King Charles and Queen Camilla later this month won't include a meeting with Jeffrey Epstein's survivors. Buckingham Palace sources say they don't want to risk jeopardising any potential legal action. Calls for a meeting have grown in light of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's ties to the late sex offender. Andrew has always strongly denied any wrongdoing. MPs will vote for a second time on whether to ban under-16s from social media later. The Prime Minister is under pressure to back a Lords amendment made to the Children's Wellbeing and Schools Bill. A government consultation is due to run until the end of May. The AA and BSM driving schools have been ordered to repay more than £760,000 to customers over a practice known as drip pricing. An investigation by the competition's watchdogs found more than 80,000 learners weren't given the total price up front, as required by law. The schools have also been fined £4.2 million. The AA, which owns both, says it's since made changes to the website. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 reopened at 10,609. It closed up 26 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, an unsettled and windy day for many. Rain moving eastwards later, a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know what you're getting with a conference. Laptop backpacks. Security pass lanyard.
If you could just pop this on.
Being asked, how was your journey in? An array of triangular sandwiches. Mm. Having to deal with a small crisis back at the office. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a great night's sleep and a tasty breakfast. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 5 minutes after eight on Wednesday, April the 15th. Indefensible. Labour's track record on defence spending, the view of a former Labour defence secretary and the boss of NATO, defended, if you were listening a few minutes ago, by a senior member of this government. I'll be asking you a very simple question. Where should the money be going? On the welfare spending or actually defence, because we won't need only welfare if we can't defend ourselves. In other news, the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, pledging to bring forward the plan to close some of those asylum hotels by 2029. He said in September of last year,
I understand why people want the hotels closed. I want them closed. We've said we'll get rid of them all by the end of the Parliament. Right. I'd like to bring that forward. I think it's a good challenge. I want to bring that forward.
And there is news on that. There has been brought forward. But what exactly is the number? Stay tuned for that. What about the idea from senior member of Reform UK, Robert Jenrick? The Southport killer's parents, so-called AR, they should be deported back to Rwanda for their effectively criminal irresponsibility. We'll look at that in more detail. In other news,
it starts with you. It starts on TikTok.
Picking up on a story you've just heard on the LBC News Bulletin, their social media bosses quizzed in Parliament as MPs get ready to vote on that social media ban for under-16s. We'll have more on that in this hour. And as the world teeters on the edge of a crisis, it was seeming the idea of one Labour MP.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things.
Well, I'm not against it, but with the world in crisis, do we really need a summer of sex and lifelong sex education in the UK? That's a Labour MP's idea. We'll tell you more later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Make no mistake, my friend, this is as bad as it can get for this Labour government as regards defence spending. And I will say, and I want to make this point, they did inherit an absolute mess. I give you that. almost 14 years, they did spend a bit of money at one point on defence, but almost 14 years of criminal irresponsibility, lack of spending in the defence budget. I absolutely give you that. But what has happened in the 2 years, effectively 2 years since Labour came to power? Well, one thing that was happened, that someone called George, now Lord Robertson, was appointed by Sir Keir Starmer to look at that, to chair the Strategic Defence Review, the so-called SDR, Strategic Defence Review. That was last year. That produced its report, and in September that became that we were looking forward to a defence investment plan. As ever, I'm going to say with this government, everything they can to put to review, put it out for public consultation, whatever they can to avoid taking a decision. And where do we find ourselves now? Well, it would appear the man of whom I speak, Lord Robertson, had had enough. Clearly, he decided to launch a torpedo towards the government, speaking in Salisbury yesterday.
There is a corrosive complacency today in Britain's political leadership. Lip service is paid to the risks, the threats, the bright red signals of danger. But even the promised national conversation about defence can't be started. The cold reality of today's dangerous world is that we cannot defend Britain with an ever-expanding welfare budget.
One of the high flyers in Tony Blair's government bringing to earth this current government, surely. And I spoke with a senior member just a few moments ago before the news. Treasury Minister, Labour MP James Murray. How did he react to that broadside from the former Defence Secretary?
I've got a lot of respect for him, but on this we just disagree. Because if you look at the decisions that we've taken about increasing defence spending, as I said, to the record levels, highest increase since the Cold War, we are putting money there to invest in defence. It is important we get the defence investment plan right, because it will be the blueprint for transformation over the next 10 years.
How embarrassing is this for you? Not you personally, for the government. Have a former Labour Defence Secretary, the boss of NATO, the man hired by Sir Keir to look at defence spending, saying that there is a corrosive complacency. This is beyond embarrassing, isn't it?
But, Nick, it's not about what someone says on any particular day. It's about getting the plan for the next 10 years right. This is the defence investment plan is a 10-year transformation plan.
This is the former boss of NATO,
Mr. Murray. But the point is, we need to get the plan right.
Surely he knows what it comes to defence.
He was
a defence secretary, he ran NATO, and he's called you and your mob corrosive complacency. That's the reality.
And Nick, I said, the first Sea Lord was at the in Parliament this week and said he's seen no such complacency in all of his interactions. But look, the important thing here is not to, say someone said X or Y on any particular day. It's about getting the plan right for the next 10 years. Whilst making the point again, Nick, because it's an important one, but whilst we're having this conversation about the Defence Investment Plan, which is a critical plan to set out what we're doing over the next 10 years, we're not sitting on our hands.
When I speak with your colleague Pat McFadden, we talk about how it's important that people are encouraged back into work. But Chief Secretary, 1,000 new claimants sign on for disability benefits each week, and the number claiming health-related inactivity benefits is rising 10 times faster than that of the working-age population. Again, you've had 20-odd months. What is your government doing about that?
Yeah, well, in the first 20 months, we started our work of reforming the welfare system, changing the universal credit system to make sure people get back into work, changing motability to reduce some of the elements of that, reducing fraud and error. All of that is some of the first things we've done about reforming the welfare system. But I'd be the first to acknowledge, as would Pat, that there's a lot more we want to do on welfare.
But it's only 1.5 million, Chief Secretary, since your party came into power. You're going backwards.
Well, we started our work, but there's a lot more to do. Of course there's a lot more to do.
But you're not even making progress.
Nick, we know there's a huge amount to do to turn around the broken welfare system that we inherited. And one of the top priorities, I know for Pat and for myself and for others of us in government, is about young people. Because at the moment, there is around 1 million young people who are not working or not even education and training. If young people go on to benefits at a young age, there's a real risk they then stay on benefits for a lot of their life. So actually, if we can get young people into work at an early age, that's better for them because they will have a better life when they're able to work if they can get a job, and it's better for the economy and it helps bring the welfare bill down.
Well, that was James Murray, noting you can only spend a pound once, when the former boss of NATO says, quotes, "We cannot defend Britain with an ever-expanding welfare bill. Where should that expenditure go?" Let's bring into the conversation Devin Ghelani, who's director of the Policy in Practice think tank. One of the architects of the UC, the Universal Credit Policy, joins me now. Look, this is a stark warning as regards defence, Mr. Ghelani, and thank you for coming on the show, but there's no point having, if we can't defend ourselves, there's no point having any welfare budget, is there? Where should the money go? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Well, if we do need, and I agree, I think we do need to spend more money on defence. I think that's where we're in a more dangerous world. If you look at where the welfare budget is increasing, the biggest drain on social security spending at the moment is the triple lock. So that is where welfare spending is half of all welfare spending. It's going up faster than wages. It's going up faster than inflation. By definition, that's what the triple lock means. And it's done a huge amount to lift pensioners out of poverty. The question is kind of how much can we, at what level do we stop? Because we're probably at a level now where if we do need to make these hard choices, that's where you're going to find the most savings. If you want to make savings in working age social security, you need to do what I think we just heard from James Murray there. We need to get people back into work. We need the economy growing. We need people back into work.
But the economy is not growing, sir, and we're not getting people back into work. Indeed, 1,000 new claimants sign on for some form of benefits every week.
Yeah. Well,
that's what's going up, that number, Mr. Ghelani, isn't it?
Yes, the number of people on Social Security. Well, I think there's two things. So one, the numbers today have gone up, and I think that's the story that you were referencing today. That on universal credit, that's because people are moving from legacy benefits onto universal credit. That's what's happened in the last 12 months. The number of people on Social Security is broadly as expected when universal credit was. That's what was forecast. That's the number of people that's on universal credit. The biggest problem, Nick, is what you've just said, which is the number of people on disability benefits going on to universal credit, staying out of work for a really long, staying on benefits for a really long time. That's the, stopping people from getting onto benefits in the first place is probably the thing we need to tackle.
A lot of people suggest that when it was initially set up, the idea of the welfare state was effectively a support, a safety net, as it were. And some would say it's now become a lifestyle. How valid is that criticism?
I think it's, for some people, I'm sure it's going to be a valid criticism, but we do, of course, need a safety net as well. And I think that's what we're missing with the cost of living going up. The other big driver of rising social security as well as disability is that the cost of living is going up, which means we're spending more money on allowing people to stay in homes because the cost of housing is going up. We're having to spend more money of the social security budget on paying for housing. Paying for disability. These are it's these additional costs. It's the cost of living that's driving up the increase in the pounds that we're spending on social security. And it's things like ill health, which is pushing people onto disability. Those are the two root causes we need to tackle.
Lastly,
rather than just hacking and slashing at social security at the sharp end where people are frankly struggling.
Lastly, we're looking at a budget now in the region of £333 billion, which is something like more than five times the defence budget. Realistically, how much could be saved, the £333 billion?
So where I said at the top, where it's going up fastest is the
triple lock.
That's hot. That is, if you wanted to make quick
how much would that save, Mr. Ghelani?
Well, at the moment, it's pushing up spending faster than anything you're spending on defence. So if you just stopped it, that the increase that you're going to see in the triple lock next year, that's money that could go into defence if that were a political decision that someone were brave enough to make, which I think is where the frustration that we heard from the former head of NATO is coming from.
Grateful for your time, Devin Ghelani. Thank you as ever. Director of the Policy and Practice think tank, pointing to the triple lock. If it will continue that spending, the welfare bill will rise by £18 billion in this financial year alone. So the defence of the nation, your security, the security of you and your families, £62 billion for an entire year. This area alone, the welfare bill, £18 billion increase in 1 year. Just the increase. Triple lock in its sights, would that be the way to go? 8:16, LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor is due in Washington for talks after criticising what she calls the folly of America's decision to go to war with Iran without an exit plan. The Cabinet Minister has told Nick the UK's defence investment plan will be published as soon as possible, following criticism from a former head of NATO. And a state visit by the King and Queen to the US later this month won't include a meeting with survivors of the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. LBC weather, an unsettled and windy day for many, rain moving eastwards through the UK. A high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the M1 southbound, heading down towards Dunstable at Junction 11A. A car's broken down, so two lanes are closed. Long delays in both directions to the Blackwall Tunnel. Just north of the tunnel, some emergency repair works are taking place. So that's causing delays on the A12 southbound from Bow and northbound, almost back to the Sun in the Sands. Also on the A12, it's very busy southbound to Junction 18 at Danbury because there's a load of debris across the road. In Lewisham, Lone Pit Vale, the A20 is blocked westbound at Gerrard Street. Traffic can get through using the other side of the road, but there are still lengthy delays all the way back to the Lee High Road.
Coming up at 4, the Deputy Leader of the Labour Party, Lucy Powell, takes your calls on LBC.
Real mornings deserve a real breakfast. Start with heart to power your routine. Grab Yo Valley Organic Greek Recipe Yogurt packed with protein. Or try Yo Valley Organic Kefir, creamy, tangy and full of billions of friendly bacteria to set you up for the day ahead. Yo Valley Organic. Breakfast made with real heart. Find it now in a store close to you.
Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Dreaming of a new kitchen? Getting started couldn't be easier. At Wix, you can begin planning your new kitchen with our design consultants. Simply arrange a free home measure or an in-store design consultation. Book your free kitchen design appointment and turn all your ideas into reality at Wix.
With a new Volkswagen T-Roc. With £2,000 towards your finance deposit on the new Volkswagen T-Roc with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Test drive the T-Roc today and see why it won What Car's Best Small SUV Award. Order by the 4th of May 2026. Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
How about Specsave ears?
Not sure.
Do you get it? Specsave ears.
Yeah, but no.
Oh, okay. Specs, and we also do hearing two savers.
Think about it. Should have gone to Specs and we also do hearing two savers. Can't see it catching on.
Okay, so we're saying Specsavers do eyes and ears. Senses savers.
Technically true.
Yeah.
But actually terrible.
Oh.
At Specsavers, we're hearing experts too, and have been for over 20 years.
Oh, should we just stick to Specsavers then?
Yeah.
Book a free hearing check today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Coming to your calls concerning defence spending. Remember, you can only spend that pound once, as I always say. Kevin, you'll be the first caller. Let's just pick up on a couple that are coming in on the emails and the texts. I've probably not done enough of those. Dominic says, for anyone who's brave enough to have served or has served, we do so to defend the principles we hold dear. Isn't it strange the government loves to see vast sums of taxpayers' money spent abroad promoting these principles and the human rights of others, but won't spend the money to defend us at home? Adam the Sparky says, tell them to cut the benefits, defend the country. It's better to be on benefits than it is to work with this Labour government. I do sense that that is a feeling that's continuing. And when, just before I come to you, Kevin, I'm just going to give you these figures, and I'll try not to blitz you with too many, but as I told you, the welfare bill will rise by £18 billion in this financial year alone. As Andrew Neil points out in his column in the Daily Mail, that would build 15 new frigates, twice the number we have, or 220 fighter jets. We have nothing like that, unfortunately, in the Royal Air Force. Our spending is, for the health service, broadly £450 billion per annum. For welfare, including pensions, £333 billion. For defence, £62 billion. And as I've said already, 1,000 new claimants sign on for disability benefits each week, and the number claiming health-related benefits is rising 10 times faster than the growth of the working-age population. This is unsustainable. If it carries on at this rate, by 2030, which is just around the corner, not around two corners maybe, that's £400 billion. But is triple lock the answer, as was suggested by my contributor, 822, Kevin in Canterbury? Is it triple lock we go for? Good morning.
Well, yeah, morning, Nick. Yes. I've just been looking it up.
pensions works out at 58% of the welfare budget.
Okay. Yep.
That's massive.
It's huge.
Now.
Yeah.
And it's over 150.
It'd be about 160, some 165, something like that, billion pounds, I would imagine.
Yeah. And the people, I think, are probably keenest on the defence. You know, we need to ramp things up. Are probably that elder generation. They tend to have a more of a. I suppose they're closer
well,
to the war.
Are you concerned about?
I've seen
defense.
It before.
Are you concerned about our level of defence expenditure, Kevin?
Well, I am, but I could see it coming. I mean, I can remember, you know, Boris Johnson. Do you remember him? standing up in the House of Commons saying, the way that we fight wars has changed forever. We don't need troops on the ground. We don't need such a large navy.
Right.
So we're going to invest everything in missiles and drones and stuff like that and new technology.
Right.
Well, they obviously did. They cut the budget. They've left us with a load. They had mothballed, you know, dozens of ships. And so here we are. You know, it's hardly surprising, is it?
What would you do? Would you start to trim the pensions with the so-called triple lock? Does that need to be reviewed?
Well, I mean, I think really we're getting very, very excited about defending ourselves, you know, as a single solitary island. You know, we're in NATO. You know, we've got the rest of Europe. We've got all the members of NATO.
Well, hang on, we can't rely
on
them.
We should fight as a force. We should fight together.
But we can't rely on... Don't you find it vaguely embarrassing that we have to rely on the French now to patrol the English Channel? Shouldn't we patrol
the... No, not so. They've got an economy and a navy that's actually larger than ours.
Sir, why should we outsource defence of the United Kingdom to a third party, in this case the French? Why do we have a military?
We're doing it together as NATO.
Why don't we do it as the United Kingdom? What the hell's the point of having the navy?
Because we're small fry.
We're meant to be the sixth most powerful economy in the planet.
Yeah, you can't do it. You can't.
Yes, you can do it, and you do it by taking a view as regards welfare spending, not for people who spent their entire life and now relying on pensions. People who are clearly milking the system to the tune of billions of pounds. It stops, and it stops now, and then we can defend this country without borrowing warships from other countries.
Well, I don't see any problem with borrowing warships. And I think your comment about, you know, fleecing us for billions and billions of pounds.
Yeah, there will be.
That's always going to happen.
Well, it stops. It stops now. No one gets benefits unless they have a face-to-face interview. Not all, but a high number of people get these benefits. They've never actually met anybody from a job centre or Department of Work and Pensions. It's all done... That stops now. Kevin, thank you. I think we're going to have to agree to disagree. 8:25 is the time. Julian in Oxford. Oxted, Julian, you're on the radio. Good morning. No, Julian, you're too slow. We'll move on to other matters. Come to another caller in a moment. Let's move into the sphere of education. And it's been reported that Britain's top Jewish private school will close this summer, in part as a result of Labour's VAT raid on private school tuition. Governors at the independent Emmanuel College, which is in Bushey in Hertfordshire, says they've been forced to take the decision because of, quote, significant and sustained financial pressures. To give you an idea, the school charges just under £30,000 a year. And you will recall, of course, the issue of school fees was a very live one at the last general election. Hilary Freeman is an author and journalist whose daughter is attending the school? Hilary, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hilary, your daughter's off to the school, is she, or what?
She was supposed to be starting the school in September. She had 100% bursary, and now she doesn't have... Not only has she not got a place at that school, she has a place at no school.
Oh,
because
my goodness.
We withdrew from the state system because we got the bursary.
Now, I know you're not a governor, and you're probably not a financial expert, but what are you picking up? The decision as regards private schools was the final story. It wouldn't, in and of itself, have closed down the school, I imagine.
No, I mean, the VAT is kind of the final nail in the coffin of the school, but there are lots of other pressures. There are simply just not enough people who can afford the fees, which is why, you know, so many people like me were on bursaries or awarded bursaries in order to go. And You know, VAT as well, meant that, you know, paying staff became much, much more expensive. But, you know, and there's just too many financial pressures upkeeping the building. And without enough pupils enrolling, it was just became, you know, unsustainable, which is tragic for, you know, so many people.
I note that the school's deputy head, Rabbi Yoni Golka, if I'm saying that correctly, says, has written an opinion piece, why Jewish schools matter more than ever in 2026. When I remind you of events in Manchester, when I remind you of ambulances being torched in London. That's very true, isn't it, Hilary? It must be a huge concern for you.
Absolutely. We're not a family who had ever considered a Jewish school for our daughter. She hasn't been at a Jewish primary school. October the 7th changed everything. We had personal anti-Semitic abuse that she suffered, that we suffered. And we wanted her to be with other Jewish people and get a Jewish education because it's so important now to feel part of the community. And I think a lot of other people feel that way. And the problem is, without Emmanuel, there just aren't enough places for Jewish children at schools in London.
So where will your daughter go?
I have absolutely no idea. We are appealing to all the other Jewish schools and asking if they would consider giving her a place. And if not, I really, really don't know what we're going to do. It's terrifying. I mean, she's devastated. She's 10 years old and her future's just been snatched away from her. She was, you know, we'd got as far as her talking about when, you know, when's the starting date? Will you put it in your diary, Mum? You know,
she must have been so excited. There we are. We said it at the same time. How excited was she that she'd got into such a great school?
Yeah, she really was. And it was, you know, it is a lovely, lovely school with, you know, that would offer so many opportunities to her that she's never going to have now. So it's just awful. And, you know, and we turned down the place at the local school, where all her friends are going. So now she can't even go there.
Let us know what happens, Hilary. I'm sorry, you don't need telling us, Mum. It's a nightmare for you. I do hope you can resolve it. We'll ask you later in the year how you get on prior to, obviously, school going back for the start of the next school year later this year. Hilary Freeman, journalist and author, thank you for that, 8:29. Julian in Oxford, I think we've got you back now. Julian, your take on the defence spending story. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Yes. Good morning. First-time caller.
Good to have you on, sir.
Thank you very much for having me on. The point is, the last contributor, I mean, makes me really mad when they're going after pensioners now. I'm not a pensioner. Mm. I'm 53 years old, one of these working people, but doesn't actually not working because, or not working in regard to Keir's way of working, because I actually don't get any benefits whatsoever and I don't want any benefits whatsoever. I actually contribute.
Yeah.
But I just think, you know, the benefit bill and everything else, the illegal immigrants, the money we're spending there, but let's go after the pensioners because that's the highest spend. I think it's sickening. And Mr. Murray, he can defend the indefensible, in my view. He goes on your programme, Question Time, all the rest of it, and it's Teflon. And he just does not. No one admits to anything, and we've walked into this defence situation. We're a proud nation. We all pay our taxes. We should be able to defend ourselves. And I just don't understand.
Are we a proud nation when we have to borrow the French Navy to patrol the English Channel?
No. Goodness. I'm very proud.
Yes.
But I find it... No, but not at the moment.
Glad we got you on a better line. Julian, thank you for your first-time call. First time, first class. Look forward to speaking with you again. More calls coming in on that. And coming up after the news, you may recall, Shabana Mahmood was here on exclusively LBC's Call the Cabinet in January. And regarding asylum hotels, she said...
policy that we inherited of housing asylum seekers in asylum hotels was the wrong thing. And that has also caused huge strife.
Well, more have been closed, and we'll give you the full details of the advances that have been made in that area after this. 8:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor has criticised what she calls the folly of America's decision to go to war with Iran without an exit plan. Rachel Reeves' remarks come after the IMF's stark forecast yesterday, predicting Britain will be hit the hardest by the conflict's economic fallout. Speaking to Nick, the Chief Secretary to the Treasury has insisted the Defence Investment Plan will
be published as soon as possible. It follows major criticism from a former head of NATO who's warned a lack of spending has put the UK in peril. And a state visit by the King and Queen to the US later this month won't include a meeting with survivors of the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Buckingham Palace sources say they don't want to risk jeopardising any legal action that could bring justice. LBC weather, an unsettled and windy day for many. Some rain moving in from the east through the afternoon. A high of 17 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
How many times do we have to sit and listen to another report or inquiry that says the multi-agency that all failed, all passed the buck, thought, no, it doesn't quite fall under our remit. But I'm sorry, multiple occasions when this kid is turning up at school with a knife and the police don't seem to do anything. They didn't even arrest him. They found him on a bus with a knife, didn't arrest him. Forget it. And nothing will really change.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
How would you like to pay?
Whatever, just take this card.
Or pay with the PayPal debit card. No harps! You can get 10 times the points on your PayPal purchases with their new rewards program, PayPal Plus.
Wow, that's a lot of points. But who are you?
I'm the smarter voice inside your head. I'm filling in for your regular smarter voice. She's got laryngitis. Hear the harps. Sign up for PayPal Plus for free in the app. Pay smarter. PayPal.
Enrollment required. Earn 1 point per £10 at PayPal online checkout. 10 per £10 with PayPal debit card. Eligible purchases only. PayPal debit card can be used where MasterCard is accepted. Terms apply.
I've just had a thought. My home needs to feel less student with one teaspoon and more a home that actually feels like me.
Sounds like a job for Wayfair.
Exactly. I'm thinking of that one statement piece that changes the whole room, or maybe just those perfect finishing touches that pull it all together.
With furniture and decor for every style and budget, Wayfair turns your home dreams into reality. So why wait to create the home you really love? Get it out of your head and into your home. Download the Wayfair app.
Train to Brighton. Spa day with the girls. Apparently it's on the beach.
You'll never get me in that ice bath.
Oh, actually, this is quite nice. Blue skies, gentle waves.
Shall we get in the sauna now?
Train back, still so relaxed. Now let's plan the next one. Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced single tickets from London Victoria to Brighton from only £8. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Plenty of calls coming in on defence. Nick, I'll be speaking with you. John as well. You're at the top of the queue and we'll come to your calls in a moment. Have I told you the time? It's 8:34 if I failed to do that. But let's pick up on something we were talking about just before the news, which was a pledge by both the Prime Minister and the Home Secretary to close some of these so-called asylum hotels. And they are delivering. 11 hotels will no longer be used to house asylum seekers, bringing the total number down to 185 at a peak. And again, you have to say that a lot of this was inherited from the previous Conservative administration. A peak of around 400. Home Office Minister Alex Norris says the fall was due to increased removals of people with no right to stay in the UK and the housing of others in alternative sites such as military barracks. Yes, places such as Crowborough. The minister said hotels have been a point of significant frustration for local communities, as well as acting as a pull factor, i.e. encouraging folk to come here illegally. Claire Pearsall is a political commentator, served as special advisor to Immigration Minister Caroline Noakes at the Home Office, and joins me now. Is this the right policy? And, of course, it does beg the question, obviously, those who are deported to their country of origin, we know where they're going, but where are the others going? Claire, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. I think it's really important to make good on the promise to close these hotels because they do cost the British public an enormous amount of money. But I think the government has been less than transparent as to where these individuals are going to go, because we've seen that Crowborough Camp is not the success story they wished it to be. And has a capacity of, I think, 500, which is an enormous amount in a small area. But where is everybody else going to go? If you're going to close those hotels, that's at least 1,200 individuals that need to be put somewhere, and the capacity just isn't there in those camps, and we don't have very many sitting there ready to take people in.
Is it part of the so-called pull factor, Claire?
I think there is a large amount of it is a pull factor. People know that if they come to the United Kingdom, they will have a roof over their head. They will get a small amount of money, but also the chances of them staying in the United Kingdom are incredibly high. Until we change that, until we start to process these people quickly and remove them if they have no right to be here, we're just going to be that magnet for those countries.
What happens next? You're right, there is considerable tension in Crowborough. Is there another solution?
I think that the solution that you've got is to process people and remove them. And I think the minute you start to see a large amount of people leaving the country because they have no right to be here, that stops the incentive for those people looking to cross the channel for an easier life in the United Kingdom. But you're not going to do that when you cannot return people to places like Afghanistan or Iran, Iraq, Eritrea. Those agreements just really don't hold up and they're not in place. So if you can't remove them, you're going to have a disproportionate high number of those individuals remaining in the United Kingdom.
Lastly, we've gone from around 400 from the previous administration, I need to say, to approximately 185, and a government ambition to close all the hotels by 2029. How realistic that ambition, Claire?
I mean, we all like a tryer, don't we? And I think the Prime Minister is trying incredibly hard, but I don't think it's realistic for the reasons I've just set out. Where are you going to put these individuals? And I think the British public are looking at homes of multiple occupation that are springing up in their areas and wondering if those are going to be the solution the government is looking for. So the transparency isn't there from the government, and I think the secrecy will end up leaving them in a worse position than they are already in.
Grateful as ever for your time, Claire Pearsall. Thank you. Political commentator, former special advisor to Immigration Minister Caroline Noakes. This is what you're saying on social media. This comes in from Mark J. The government have moved the illegal immigrants from hotels into houses that should be used by families converted into homes of multiple occupancy. Sorry, that's Mark Jackson in Ashford. Thank you for that. This comes in from Bruce. Why not use the hotels now being vacated by illegal immigrants as convalescent home for patients in hospitals waiting for care packages? Also, this comes as a report. The Daily Mail reports that in one part of Kent, Westmorling, Eastmorling and Tunbridge, 220 migrants were allocated 35 properties. And you have a Kent County Councillor, Conservative Councillor Andrew Kennedy, saying they're being given housing in desirable residential areas, unsuitable for large groups of men who probably speak little English. So yet more pressure there in that part of the country. I know Crowborough is in Sussex, but this is adjacent counties, isn't it? And this is Westmorling, Eastmorling and Tunbridge, 220 people in 35 properties. This problem is not going away. We may take more calls on that. Let's come back, though, to spending. Livio says, up until 2022, we were the third largest military spender in the world behind the US and China. We're now the sixth behind US, China, Russia, India and Germany. We spend more than France or Italy, yet they both have larger or comparable size forces. The question of should we spend more should not be asked until the question of why we get so little a bang for our buck is answered. Paul says, I'm not against people receiving benefits. Sorry, that's just fished out. I'm not against people receiving benefits, but we need to make sure that they are earned. All right, thank you for that. Let's get Nick and Cheam into the conversation. Nick, your reaction. You can spend a pound once. Where should it go? Good morning.
Well, it certainly shouldn't be on benefits. I agree with you 100% that people are milking the system.
Yep.
I had a client of mine contact me and asked if she wanted to borrow money to buy a car. When right. I asked her what she did for a living, she said she didn't work. Right. So I said, well, how are you going to pay for the car? She said, oh, through Universal Credit. Now, she told me she's got two children with learning disabilities.
Right.
What do you think she gets a month in her bank account?
600 quid. I've no idea.
£3,256.
No, come on. How do you get to that?
You tell me. But where is her incentive to work?
But that you'd need to make about you'd need to be on about 60-65k to match that, 70k.
Exactly. So she's never, 70,000. In a million years, going to go back into the working environment.
So if we look at this budget, Nick, it's £333 billion. We know that more than half of that is on pensions, and I'm not personally keen to tackle pensions because they've worked, most of them have worked their entire life and they deserve their pension. But we've still got 160...
Well, they've paid for it. They've paid for their
pension. Yeah, we've still got 160 billion quid up for grabs here.
Well, we should be putting money into our defence so as we are not a weak link.
How nervous are you, lastly, when you hear Lord Robertson, who was a Labour Defence Secretary, one of the shining stars in the Blair administration, got the job as Secretary General of NATO, was commissioned by Sir Keir Starmer to look at the SDR Strategic Defence Review, and it's still not put in line, and he launches that broadside yesterday. How nervous does it make you?
It makes me nervous, but he's right. The trouble with Keir Starmer is he waffles. He doesn't like to make a decision. He's a typical solicitor.
Mm. Yeah, because, of course, all the time they're waffling, we're paying them. Nick, thank you for that, if it's right, eye-watering amount. More than £3,000 a month, my God. John in Croydon. John, how nervous are you when you hear what Lord Robertson has to say? Good morning.
Well, it was about benefits, really, because it seems to me a lot of people are saying cut the triple...
One of my contributors is suggesting it, yes.
Yeah, so if you do that, then all you're going to do is make a lot of people who are beyond working age poorer. They have no option other than to receive pensions. You give a bit of money back to the country, or for defence. But if you found a way to reduce welfare payments, then to people of working age, then you get a double benefit, that you get more money to pay for defence, and also those people would actually work in the economy and generating more wealth for the nation. At the moment, they're not doing that.
When I tell you, as is pointed out today, 1,000 new claimants sign on the disability benefit every week, reports Andrew Neil in the Daily Mail, the number claiming these benefits is rising 10 times faster than the growth of the working age population. What does that tell you about the system, John?
Well, first thing tells me if it's a day about, got a question, but moving on, it tells me that there are not enough regulations and checks against what is happening.
Yeah.
And clearly we're not a more sickly nation than we were. I can remember, I'm quite old now, I can remember 50, 60 years ago, and people were in a lot poorer health then. People died at a younger age. There's no reason why, as far as I can see, so many more people should be moving away from working life.
John, thank you. Simon in Norwich, we need money. We need it for defence. Where are we going to get it?
Hi, Nick. Well, you just had a... What really annoys me, you just had a chap come on saying, take it off the pensioners, do away with the triple lock, saying it's a benefit. Your pension is not a benefit. You've paid into it all your working life.
You have?
Okay? The benefit is paid to people who are not in work. And, you know, the elephant in the room. We all know of people who should be in work, could work, but won't work.
Absolutely.
We all know of people who won't work more than X amount of hours a week because it will affect their benefits.
Yeah.
It's all got to be stopped.
But how? Well, for a start, face-to-face interviews, I think, would help, rather than just effectively filling in online and you get your benefit.
Exactly. I mean, I've got a business. I run a business. I employ people. In the past, when we've wanted staff, you get people, they might do 2, 3, 4 days, and off they go. They're not interested. All they're interested in is having something to take back to the benefits office that they've seen somebody about a job or what. They're just not interested in work, a lot of them.
And that just keeps the system ticking, doesn't it? Simon, thank you. More calls coming in on this. Now, coming up after the news, this MP's vote on a social media ban for under 16, something we've talked a lot about here on LBC, both me and, of course, my colleagues as well. Remember, I spoke with Ellen Room. Now, she believed her son died attempting an online challenge. Remember, she told us a very moving story. She said on LBC...
We have proved with these cases in America and time again how much harmful material our children are seeing online and being fed through the algorithms. We need to change this. We need the government to step up and make differences.
More on that crucial vote after this. It's 8:45, LBC News headlines read by Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, is due to hold talks in Washington with her counterpart after criticising what she calls the folly of America's decision to go to war with Iran without an exit plan. A senior minister has told Nick that the UK's defence investment plan will be published as soon as possible, following scathing criticism from a former head of NATO. And the government's under pressure to support a Lord's proposed ban on social media for under-16s, ahead of a Commons vote later. LBC weather, an unsettled and windy day for many, rain moving eastwards through the UK, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. A couple of problems on the motorways. Firstly, the M1 still very slow southbound to junction 11A at Dunstable. And that was after a car broke down earlier. One lane is still closed for recovery. And then on the southern stretch of the M25, it's very busy clockwise to junction 5 at the M26. Now, there are severe delays in East London at the Blackwall Tunnel. There are long delays both ways because some emergency repair works which are having to take place just north of the tunnel. So southbound the queue on the A12 back to Bow, and northbound it's slow back to the Sun in the Sands. And then also on the A12, there are southbound delays to junction 18 at Danbury. There's a load of debris across the road. And Chiltern Railway services are delayed by about half an hour to and from Marylebone.
Coming up at 4, the Deputy Leader of the Labour Party, Lucy Powell, takes your calls on LBC.
How about Specsave ears?
Not sure.
Do you get it? Specsave ears?
Yeah, but no.
Oh, okay. Specs, and we also do hearing two savers.
Think about it. Should have gone to Specs, and we also do hearing two savers. Can't see it catching on.
Okay, so we're saying Specsavers do eyes and ears. Senses savers.
Technically true.
Yeah.
But actually terrible.
Oh.
At Specsavers, we're hearing experts too, and have been for over 20 years.
Oh, should we just stick to Specsavers then?
Yeah.
Book a free hearing check today.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. GlobalAcademy.com.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. That's why right now you can get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, you! Yeah, you! What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to €100,000 per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app. The XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
High-pressure sales tactics, huge site fee increases, and a loss of value have left many holiday park homeowners feeling misled, angry, and trapped. The Holiday Park Advice Center can help claim back any money you're owed. Text ADVICE to 78900.
Hello, Holiday Park Advice Center.
That's ADVICE to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming up on 10 minutes before 9 now, if you listen to LBC regularly, you will know that we take the issue of safety online security very seriously here. And the issue of social media was raised in Parliament yesterday when the head of public affairs at TikTok, Giles Derrington, appeared before a panel of MPs, one of whom is a Lib Dem for Tewkesbury, Cameron Thomas. Now, Mr. Thomas raised the case of Ellen Room. We played your clip just there. Of course, has been campaigning and fighting for years to get data from TikTok account of her son Julian, or Jules Sweeney, who took his life in 2022. Ms. Room, who I said we've spoken to on a number of occasions, believes her son could have died doing an online challenge, therefore is suing TikTok with other British families whose children died in similar circumstances. Here's that question from that Lib Dem, Cameron Thomas.
If you believed that another person was influencing your child to harm themselves, would you want to know about it?
Yes.
You know who John Jules Sweeney was? So Jules lived just a couple of miles away from me until he took his own life. If you found your child the way that Jules's mother found him, would you want to know why?
Yes.
Hmm. credit to Cameron Thomas there. Let's bring the conversation to Lord Nash, a Conservative peer, former Education Minister, whose amendment on a social media ban will be debated in the Commons today. Lord Nash, thank you very much for coming on. Just briefly outline to my listeners, what is it that the architecture that you put together regarding this this reading? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, what we're proposing, actually, I wouldn't like to call it a ban. It's just to delay access to certain harmful social media apps to 16, to give our children just a little bit more time to mature, to be able to distinguish right from wrong, fact from fiction. We know that the mid-teen adolescent years, 13, 14, 15, the children are particularly vulnerable, and they do get served up, without asking for it, an awful lot of harmful stuff on these some of these social media sites. And we just want to delay the period until they actually have to deal with this sort of thing.
A lot of campaigners in this area point to Australia. Lord Nash, have you been monitoring what's happening there, and would you count it as a success or halfway there or whatever?
I would count it as a success. There's been some scaremongering about the fact that there are still quite a few children on social media in Australia. They've taken down 5 million accounts. Because the reason why there are still some children on social media in Australia is, as the Australian eSafety Commissioner said last week, it's because the social media companies are not yet doing their job properly. The social media companies admit that they can have highly effective age verification, and the eSafety Commission in Australia has now put the squeeze on them to do that. And I'm sure they will be able to do that. Very few Australian children are actually deliberately getting around this. So there's no doubt that this can be done.
Do you sense a degree of nervousness among TikTok and similar companies now?
Yes, and in fact, I've had conversations with some of these companies, and the impression I'm getting is that, provided it's a level playing field for all these companies, they'll eventually come quietly.
You can't answer this question, but I'm going to ask you, why do you suppose it would be that this country does appear to be moving rather slowly in this direction when compared to others?
Well, I think it's because the government, frankly, is a bit indecisive. As we know, they are very much behind the eight ball in terms of their thinking on this. They weren't really engaged with this until we brought it to their intention. And they may be a little frightened of the companies, but the government acted really quite decisively on pornography. They acted decisively on nudification apps. And all I'm saying to them is, particularly now, following these game-changing US cases where some pretty shocking material was disclosed by the social media companies, and they were found to have acted with malice, oppression, fraud, and to be negligent, and to have deliberately designed addictive apps. These are game changers, and the Prime Minister has said that, and that he will now act to legislate against these harmful aspects of social media. So I'm proposing that what they do is to effectively adopt my amendment, or come forward with their own amendment now, which does the same, because the situation is moving so fast, we can't play catch-up slowly.
Well, you rightly cite that so many of these firms in the United States, it has been suggested that one of the reasons we're not moving quickly is Sir Keir Starmer wants to preserve his relationship with Donald Trump, many of whom, of course, friends, run these companies. Is that a fair claim?
It could be, but I think it was quite clear from the documents in the States that there are people of conscience working in these social media companies, but they're suppressed. And I wouldn't want to see a situation in this country where we have people of conscience being suppressed because of other issues. Children must come first.
Lastly, if you would, Lord Nash, talk my listeners through the parliamentary procedure. So this amendment is debated today. What happens next, Lord Nash?
Well, that no doubt the government will try, depending on their backbenchers, to kick out. My amendment's gone back to the Commons. They'll try and kick it out and bring forward their own amendment to give them the ability, following this consultation, which we say is unnecessary, to do whatever they decide to do, if anything, in whatever timescale they decide. This will come back to the Lords, and I very much hope the Lords will kick that out and put my amendment back again. So it's, again, slightly of chicken, but I'm also hoping to get the government to frankly see sense. It would be a very, very small move to move from where they are to adopt my proposals in their own words, and then the consultation can be about the equally important matter of AI chatbots, companions, VPNs, and a whole lot of issues. This world is moving so fast, we're always going to be playing catch-up in legislation. We just need to get quicker at it.
lastly, noting that the world moves, I mean, how long might this game of ping pong go on, Lord Nash?
Probably not more than 10 days.
Okay, grateful for your time. Thank you. John, now Lord Nash, Conservative peer, served as Education Minister, putting that amendment for the debating later today. We might take calls on that, but it understandably is the realm of defence or defence of the realm that you want to discuss. Sarah's in Cambridge. Sarah, where are we going to find more money? Well, assuming you want more money for defence, where are we going to find it? Good morning.
Well, I'm concerned. I just want to give a different perspective on particularly disability benefits, mm-hmm. and why it might not be a good idea just alone to cut disability benefits. So I had cancer 5 years ago.
Right.
So when people say, you know, people are living longer, so they must be healthier, that's not the case, because the treatments for many serious conditions are health damaging. And I went back to work after my cancer treatment. I couldn't cope anymore with working full-time, so I dropped to part-time. I tried for 4 years, three and a half probably, to work just 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't do it, and I've ended up having to leave my job. And if I didn't get welfare benefits, disability benefits, I would have nothing at the moment. One of the benefits I get is contribution-based, like a pension. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're going to say you're going to cut disability, and I've seen people at the job centre regularly.
What do you mean you've seen people at the job centre? Sorry, just expand on what
you're going to say. I see you have meetings there.
I see what you mean.
I have meetings.
I see. I've got it.
And I meet other people, cancer survivors at Maggie's, and they're in the same situation at the Maggie's Cancer Care Centres. They're in the same situation as me, trying to manage work and their health. If you're going to cut disability benefits, you can't just focus on the people who are going to lose their benefits. You also need to change the way that the workplace is run to accommodate the different ways in which people with disability mm-hmm. can work going forward. Because that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to work and I couldn't.
But the point you make that you see people, or I'm going to say you have meetings there, underscores, in your case, of course it's valid, but in many instances we're paying out this money and no one has ever set eyes on the claimant. It's all done online. That is ludicrous.
Well, I will be honest with you, I don't know how that happens.
In my experience, I
cannot understand. I just don't understand. My meetings have been reduced now because, as well as looking after my own health, I'm also a carer. So for my dad, who's very frail, so I don't, because I'm doing that as well, I don't have to go in so regularly.
Good luck with what you're doing and looking after your father. I'm afraid we have to move on. The music means we have to move on, but your case is a classic example of how you would be protected, and the others we would maybe take a view at. Right, we need to move to other matters. We had a long conversation yesterday about the Southport killer, so-called AR. Well, here's a review from Reform UK Treasury spokesman Robert Jenrick, speaking to the Daily Tea Telegraph, the Daily Tea podcast.
As I understand it, they came here for asylum. They enjoyed the hospitality, generosity of the UK, and they've abused that.
Plus, the South East Water CEO won't take a bonus, £115,000, after, of course, many people were deprived of water over the holiday period. We'll see how that goes down in parts of Kent. And the Labour MP wants to launch a Summer of Sex campaign. What exactly does that mean? 9 o'clock news on LBC's next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock. The Chancellor is to meet her US counterpart in Washington later after expressing her anger that America went to war without an exit plan. Rachel Reeves says President Trump's folly in Iran means families in the UK are suffering as a result. Her comments coincide with a forecast predicting the UK will be hit the hardest by the economic fallout of the war. Former Cabinet Office economist Simon French has told Nick this morning some responsibility lies at the doors of Number 10.
This
is a pretty stark warning, isn't it, from the International Monetary Fund that the UK is lacking in resilience, particularly in its energy markets. The lack of domestic supply will hit home because those are choices that this government has made. Yes, there are international factors, but domestic choices over energy policy was one of the big driving forces why the UK saw the biggest reduction in its growth forecast for this year.
The government insists the UK is well placed to absorb some of the economic shock from the conflict. A senior minister has refused to be drawn while speaking to LBC on a timeline for publishing the defence investment plan. So Keir Starmer's yet to sign it off, even though it was due to be published last autumn. Yesterday, a former head of NATO, Lord Robertson, warned a lack of investment has left the UK in peril. But the Chief Secretary to the Treasury, James Murray's, told Nick the issue is being taken seriously.
You might remember that we came in with a manifesto that said that in this Parliament we would set out a path towards 2.5% of GDP being spent on defence. Because of decisions the Chancellor has taken, you know, with the Prime Minister, we're going to be hitting 2.6%, so exceeding that target, from April next year in a fully funded way. So we are making sure that money is there for defence, but it's important we spend it in the right way, which is why it's so important to get the defence investment plan right.
MPs will vote for a second time later on whether to ban under-16s from social media. The Prime Minister's under pressure to back a Lords amendment made to the Children's Wellbeing and Schools Bill. A separate government consultation is due to run on the issue until the end of next month. A watchdog has fined two driving schools owned by the AA more than £4 million for what's known as drip pricing. The Competition and Markets Authority says the firms had not included a mandatory booking fee in their upfront prices. And work is starting on a six-month operation to clear thousands of tonnes of waste illegally dumped in a field in Oxfordshire. It'll cost £7.3 million to remove the rubbish from the site in Kidlington. It's the first of four areas earmarked for clearance at the taxpayers' expense. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 6 points at 10,616. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, an unsettled and windy morning for many. Rain will move eastwards through the UK later, a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hello, beautiful people! Get ready to rock with a new Volkswagen T-Roc. With £2,000 towards your finance deposit on the new Volkswagen T-Roc with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Test drive the T-Roc today and see why it won What Car's Best Small SUV Award. Woo-hoo! Order by the 4th of May 2026. Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services. Woo-hoo!
Is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after nine, Wednesday the 15th of April. Coming up in this hour, we will return to the conversation we had yesterday, which dominated the show actually yesterday. Despite events in Iran, despite President Trump thinking he's the Messiah, it was the appalling events of Southport, the inquiry, the first part of that inquiry, and AR, as he is referred to, with due respect to, of course, the parents of the grieving parents of those three victims. And what should happen to his, AR's parents? We'll hear more on that in a moment. In other news,
the head of one of the UK's worst-performing water companies won't resign over major supply issues, but will give up his bonus. I'm LBC's Joseph Draper, live in Tunbridge Wells.
And with the parlous state of our defence, the fact that growth is effectively flatlining, one Labour MP decides we need... Shack, the Labour MP who wants a Summer of Sex campaign, but what exactly are they on about? We'll tell you more later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
While praise should be directed to Sir Adrian Fulford, the former High Court judge who is chairing the Southport inquiry because he didn't mince his words, it's fair to say afterwards that politicians didn't really know which way to go, and nor did lawyers. What action should be taken? Because when it comes to culpability, when it comes to blame, while quite rightly the police forces are being investigated and health authorities and local authorities as well, what of the parents? They must have known. don't know about you, but this completely dominated our show yesterday. And indeed, when I met with some friends last night, the first subject everyone wanted to talk about was those poor girls and AR, as how we will refer to him. Well, one politician has had an idea, and speaking to the Daily Tea, that's the podcast for the Daily Telegraph, Robert Jenrick has suggested the parents should be deported. We'll hear more from him in a moment. But I put that proposal to the senior Labour MP, James Murray. He was on the media round, as it's called. What did he make of Mr Jenrick's idea?
I don't know the details of that request, Nick.
Well, they came from Rwanda, and Robert Jenrick is suggesting they're sent back to Rwanda because of their criminal irresponsibility as regards to their son, AR.
I don't know how that question is going to play out, Nick. What I do know is that the report that we had on Monday was unbearably harrowing and horrific. And you know, there's so many conclusions we can draw from it. I know there's a number of recommendations and systemic failures over 5 years that we need to address. I think one really important issue, and I know that phase two of the inquiry is going to look at this, is around people who are fixated on violence, even where they don't have sort of terrorist motivations or whatever, but where they're fixated on violence, and how do we deal with that? And that is such an important issue for us as a government.
An answer, but not the answer. Let's bring into conversation Robert Jenrick, the Reform UK Treasury spokesman. Can I start, Mr Jenrick? Thank you for coming on the show. Can I start by asking your view of the work done by Sir Adrian Fulford, the chair? He didn't hold back yesterday, did he, Mr Jenrick? Good morning.
Yeah, well, good morning. I thought it was an extremely thorough report, and all credit should go to Sir Adrian for that. Yes, absolutely. On the question about the killer's parents, look, as I'm a parent myself, and I think we can all imagine situations where our children do bad things, get into bad situations, and we struggle with the moral dilemma that poses. But this is on another level to that, as I think Sir Adrian really said when he concluded that they'd failed in their basic moral duty as members of a society, of a community. If you see your child building up an arsenal of weapons, becoming fixated on violence and murder, you have to act. And it's even worse than that in the case of these parents, because it's not just that they didn't do anything, they actively obstructed the authorities from taking action. The school, the social worker, they made life more difficult, they made it harder for those individuals to do what they should have done. And if the parents had acted, we know that almost certainly this crime wouldn't have happened. And that leads me to, I think, the inescapable conclusion that they should leave the country. You know, they came here as asylum seekers. They benefited from the hospitality, the generosity, however you want to describe it, of the British people. And they forfeited that right now. And they should be deported back to Rwanda.
Mr Jenrick, you trained in law. You'll be aware there's no current legal process that would allow for that, only if the AR had been involved in an act or preparation of an act of terrorism. So how would you rework the laws, Mr Jenrick? Am I always going to be responsible for the acts of my children?
No, and I think that's an important point here. What I'm saying is not that the parents should be held responsible for the actions of their children. They should be held responsible for their own actions. And the inquiry has already heard evidence to the effect that they actively obstructed the authorities. They were dishonest. They covered up on behalf of their child. And it's those actions that they should be held responsible for, not those of somebody else. But I would just say this, Nick, the law does give the Home Secretary a very broad power to revoke the citizenship or revoke the immigration status of individuals who are here in the UK and to remove them from our country if they are deemed not to be conducive to the public good. And I would have thought we know enough about this case and the actions of these people to conclude that it is not conducive to the public good that they remain here, and that it is a very bad example to society more generally if they do stay, and that they should go back home to Rwanda, which is now a safe country, it's important to say, and that they should live out the rest of their lives there.
Your request is totally in line with the wishes, of course, of the grieving parents. What would be the process that the Home Secretary would need to follow, Mr Jenrick? Are you aware of that?
I am, and I did this myself when I was a minister, when I came across people who were, after the October the 7th attacks, lionising Hamas and Hezbollah and celebrating the murder of Israeli citizens. And we reviewed the evidence of their actions, took a decision that it was not conducive for the public good for them to remain in the UK, gave those individuals a short right of reply, which obviously they exercised, and then came to the conclusion and removed their right to be here in the UK. It is not been used often, but it has been used in the past. And frankly, it should be used more so, because if we're giving out hundreds of thousands of asylum statuses, as we have done in recent times, and if there are millions of people coming in on visas for everything from students to tourists, then it is right that we are very, very rigorous in saying that if you breach the basic standards of our country, then you should be out.
Lastly, in a related conversation, and reminding my listeners you served as an immigration minister with the Conservative government, you may be aware that this government is lauding the fact that they've closed 11 of the so-called asylum-seeking hotels. They say the number's gone down from 400 to around 189. But down in Kent, an area you'll know well, of course, with Reform UK, it's been revealed that in towns such as Westmorling, Eastmorling and Tunbridge, 220 migrants have been allocated 35 properties in Kent. Is this the solution? You take them out of hotels and you give them desirable housing?
Well, that's the whole problem. If you're just constantly trying to sort out the symptoms of the challenge, you never get to the heart of it. Do you house them in hotels? Do you put them in the house next door to you? Do you put them in military sites? Do you put them in tents? You know, the main thing is we don't want them here in the first place. So you've got to detain and deport everyone that comes here illegally. No asylum for these individuals, no right to live in this country. That is the only way to fix this. And my fear is that the Labour government have learnt nothing from the mistakes of the last Conservative government and are spending all their time
on
trying
to find... What were those mistakes, Mr. Jenner? I mean, I have to say you were awful at some of those mistakes, weren't you?
They haven't learnt that you don't spend your time just trying to work out how's the best way to house illegal migrants. You get them out of the country. And you do that by leaving the ECHR, ending the merry-go-round of legal claims that frustrate that today, and deporting people back to where they came from, even if that, frankly, is a tough part of the world. That is the only way to fix this problem, or we'll be stuck in this spiral forever, with billions and billions being wasted, people who we know nothing about living amongst us, some causing very serious crimes, and the generosity of the British public being routinely abused.
Robert Jenrick is Reform UK's Treasury spokesperson. Thank you very much for your time. This initially, of course, came from an interview with the Daily Tea, the Daily Telegraph podcast. Let's go to what Sir Adrian Fulford said. Now, he's the inquiry chairman, remind you. He launched the initial part of the inquiry. And he said quite plainly, the atrocity would not have happened if the father, Alphonse Ruda Caban, I can say his name, and the mother Letitia had done, quotes, what they morally ought to have done. He said the pair fled Rwanda after the fallout from the 1994 genocide and came to the UK in 2002. They failed to set boundaries for AR. They allowed weapons into the home. They did not report key warning signs before the attack. So before some of you run away with the idea, well, you can never really be responsible for the acts of your children, as Mr. Jenner just said, he's not expecting that. But these parents knew that weapons were being shipped in some instances knives, machetes and knives. They knew that. Why did they not act? They knew that their son was exhibiting almost psychotic dangerousness. Why did they not act? You may recall we took a call from his father in the Northwest, who's doing everything he can with his daughter, who's younger than AR in her early teens, but no one is listening to him. They should have done more. So while I know that Robert Jenrick sometimes attacks understandable opprobrium and ire from many of you, surely in this instance, where it is reported that we are now paying for protection for AR's parents, it is reported, so I'm not saying that's a fact, we are paying for their protection, surely we should be paying for a one-way ticket for them to Rwanda, shouldn't we? And if it renders them stateless, so be it. Their actions, and this is the judge speaking, this isn't Mr. Jenrick, this isn't me, this is a retired High Court judge, Sir Adrian Fulford. If they had done what they morally ought to have done, those three little girls would still be alive. And remember the little girls who were injured as well, and the adults, by the way. Six others were injured, some of them with life-altering, well, certainly with scars, for the rest of their life. It's time to ship them back, isn't it? We'll look at that. Plus, as an MP launches the idea of a Summer of Sex campaign, what exactly does that mean? It's the other side of the 9:15 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor is to meet her US counterpart in Washington later after expressing her anger that America went to a war with Iran without an exit plan.
Two further men have been charged with murder following the death of Finbar Sullivan in Primrose Hill in North London. And speaking to Nick, a senior minister has refused to be drawn on a timeline for publishing the defence investment plan, despite criticism from a former head of NATO. LBC weather, an unsettled and windy day for many. Rain moving eastwards later, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very busy on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 18 at Chorley Wood to 17 at Maple Cross. And that's because a car broke down earlier. It's now been recovered, but it's still very slow. And then also on the M25, one lane is closed anti-clockwise just after junction 13 at Staines. The A12 remains closed southbound at junction 18 at Danbury because of an ongoing investigation. And that's causing delays. Severe delays as well at the Blackwater Tunnel in both directions because of the emergency works just north of the tunnel. Southbound on the A12, it's slow from Bow and northbound from the Sun in the Sands. On the trains, Chiltern Railway services are delayed by about 50 minutes now to and from Marylebone.
Coming up at 4, the Deputy Leader of the Labour Party, Lucy Powell, takes your calls on LBC.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You, the daddy of air conditioning. For over 15 years, Cool You have specialised in installing our fully internal aircon systems throughout London, with no mess, no fuss, and no external condenser. And from April the 10th to the 19th, come and meet me and the team at the Ideal Home Show, London Olympia. Daddy cool. Cool You, for a cool, comfortable home.
Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Hello, beautiful people! Get ready to rock with a new Volkswagen T-Roc. With £2,000 towards your finance deposit on the new Volkswagen T-Roc with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Test drive the T-Roc today and see why it won What Car's Best Small SUV Award. Woo-hoo! Order by the 4th of May 2026. Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services. Woo-hoo!
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Coming to you, Shuvik and Anil, with this idea. Just want to pick up on a couple of emails that are coming in. Simon in York, good Simon of York, says, Jenrick has absolutely no honour. It's disgusting he's using such an awful tragedy where three children lost their lives to achieve political goals. No matter what your politics, you should find this disgusting unless you have no moral compass. I just remind you that it's based on what Sir Adrian Fulford said. I'll quote again, the parents, if they had done what they morally ought to have done. Now, it's not Sir Adrian who's suggesting they should be deported, but I can't recall a judge who's chairing an inquiry going quite as far as he did. Alfred, Robert Jenrick, the minister who boasted about asylum hotels, now proposing two-tier justice. Will parents of a British child be sent to jail for similar offences or not? And this man is a lawyer? Well, again, he's proposing that if you know that your son or your daughter is putting together an arsenal of weapons, is that wrong? Joan in Norwich makes a good point. One thing I haven't mentioned in the case, how did AR pay for the weapons he ordered online? He had no income, so the parents' credit or debit cards paying for the weapons? That makes them culpable. Good point, Joan. Shuvik in Eltham. Shuvik, should they be deported? Morning.
This is what Axel Rudikavala did, not what his parents did. Mm-hmm. I think that's the first point. And
but they could have done more to... If we can just refer to him as AR, out of respect for the parents. In fact, why don't I read out the little girls' names? Because they say their girls' names. So we're talking Bibi King, Elsie Dot Stancombe, and Alice da Silva Aguiar. Let's talk about them. AR's parents helped facilitate, or certainly did nothing to prevent, their son building up an arsenal or a series of knives and a machetes. Shuvik, come on.
Yeah, sure. And I don't know what the parents of the three murdered girls think. We don't know what they think.
Well, they want criminal charges. At least they want criminal charges. That we can say that.
Okay. We'll consider criminal charges then. That's not the same as deporting people without due process.
You don't think they'd abuse the hospitality of our great nation?
I think we don't know what happened and what led Axel Rudi Kavala.
I have asked nicely. The parents of the dead girls ask we don't use his name, Shuvik. I don't know what you're finding hard about this. Can I ask you to refer to him, please, as AR, Shuvik?
Okay, Thank you. What about the parents of John Venables and Robert Thompson? Should they be deported?
Well, no, this is the killers of James Bulger. They were born in the United Kingdom.
Oh, okay. But in terms of wrongdoing, there is no difference. The atrocity is the same. I mean, it was admittedly it's worse in AR's case, but I mean, this is a very dangerous.
But lastly, I'm failing to get my point across to you, Shuvik, so I apologise. The parents of Robert Thompson and John Venables, who took the life of James Bulger, were not aware and did not in any way facilitate them, those two young men as they were, in the acts they did. We know, and the judge has said, excuse me, that the parents of AR failed to do their moral duty. Shuvik, that is the gulf of difference in this conversation.
Why is Jim Venables a free man today? Why
can't we just stay with whether AR's parents should go to Rwanda? Can we not stay with that one for now?
Right. Okay. This is what I mean. We don't know what exactly happened. I mean, if we start deporting people, a lot of people from ethnic minorities they have fairly crucial jobs in Britain today. Mm-hmm. And if we start targeting whole communities.
All right. Shuvik, thank you. You're not in favour. We'll take more calls on that. Let's do a couple of emails on that and other subjects. We talked about the state of the Ministry of Defence, or at least the Ministry of Defence. We've hardly got one. Rachel says, so it's welfare or war, but not the super wealthy or corporations. They don't need protection too from war, so they shouldn't pay. On the subject of the IMF warning, let's bring in, I probably didn't do enough of those. This comes in from Lenny in Tower Hill. It's quite clear the promises made by Rachel Reeves in opposition, she's failing to deliver. She's in Washington. I hope she stays there. Well, if we're talking about activities of some of our Labour MPs, let's talk about a summer of sex.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be.
I speak of Samantha Niblett, Labour, what a lovely name, Niblett, Labour MP for South Derbyshire, calling for lifelong sex education in a bid to improve public health and safety. She said the Yes, Sex, Please, We're British, I'll repeat, Yes, Sex, Please, We're British campaign will focus on education in understanding consent, respect and healthy relationships, with the aim of preventing abuse and violence. She's partnered with a sex educator, whatever the hell that is, who wants to steer people away from pornography as being the default sex education. Cleo Watson co-hosts the In the Room podcast, is a former special advisor to Prime Minister Boris Johnson and wrote two political novels. There's no shortage of political crises at the moment, not least with the economy and the state of defence. Without being too sort of confrontational, do we need to learn a lot more about sex? Good morning, Cleo.
Hello, Nick. I don't know if that's speaking from personal experience or not. I mean, I was just listening to your previous segment with the emails and calls coming in from your listeners. Yeah. And I was thinking, you know, a summer of sex coming up. What a lovely and joyful thing to talk about. But that does feel somewhat out of step with our problems just now. And we do have some existential crises on this front. I don't think she's wrong to talk about sex education. We have a dwindling birth rate. We've got actually a very high number of STIs, particularly mm-hmm. amongst surprisingly older people. But the rape gangs inquiry is about to kick off. We've got a major economic crisis, and it's just, I don't suppose anybody in government is thanking her just now for what is obviously quite a brave intervention. But, you know, I don't think she'll be flooded with MPs wanting to get involved with this campaign, would be my guess. And having written some quite racy novels about politics, number one, my job's now very hard. Satire is dead because you just can't make this stuff up. But also, you know, in my experience, certainly from my my book sales, people aren't that interested in their MPs having sex. They don't really want to think about it.
What are the titles of your novels?
The first is called Whips, and the follow-up is called Cleavage. So,
well, if that isn't a Netflix series in the waiting, I don't know what is. I'm speaking to the next Gilly Cooper, clearly, Cleo.
I wish.
What are the plot lines of Whips? And did you say Cleavage? You did say Cleavage.
Cleavage, yes. Right. Which is Whips is obviously quite obvious. Cleavage is a bit more niche and is about it's about a general election and kind of how the country divides up. And
right.
Again, this is it sounds silly, but in the context of, you know, the topic we're talking about, it doesn't sound that ludicrous anymore. It's about how a political party uses a pornography website to work out how voters think in different parts of the country. And
where did that idea? Is that working too closely with Boris that gave you this idea?
Maybe it is. It's because I've been thinking about all the different ways campaigns can scrape data from people. So obviously, you know, 10 years ago, everyone was talking about Facebook. And then I thought, I wonder if there are other ways to do it. Gosh, it's only 9:30, so I'm sorry to everybody who's trying to drive or concentrate. But Pornhub, which is a very popular website, I think it's the fifth most popular website in the UK. They produce a map every year of what the most popular search term is on their website. So it's sort of what people are after in Cornwall or Yorkshire or whatever. It got me thinking, basically.
Okay. Every day's a school day. I'm so glad we are. Lastly, let me ask this. If you'll allow that perhaps most of the education should go to our younger folk, because they're probably at it more than some of our older folk, not universally, but do you think they'll even listen to what an MP has to say about sex anyway, Cleo?
I suspect it would put them off somewhat. I mean, on a serious note, there is a major safeguarding question here.
Right.
If we're going to be talking about this kind of stuff in schools, it needs to be, you know, it needs to be done in a very considered manner. And to be honest, you know, the curriculum is strapped for space, and the biggest questions really are practicing safe sex. I was thinking, you know, I'm not sure. Maybe this is a very clever marketing strategy. Here we are talking about I think there are, you know, I think, wouldn't it be fun if they were doing something like teaming up someone from the Manosphere and the Women's Institute or something? Let's really mix everyone up a bit.
Great documentary. That is brilliant. You are clever. Tell me, did Boris read your books?
I have no idea. He's more of a writer than a reader, I believe. I don't think he can quote them like he can Shakespeare.
Cleo, I have enjoyed our conversation. Do speak again. Cleo Watson, check out her books, and she's co-host of the In the Room podcast, served as a SPAD, Special Advisor to Prime Minister Boris Johnson. We'll come back to that conversation concerning the inquiry in Southport. Let me just read this out. Tim says, I'm a dad like you. My son's 11. That makes him a child who lives under my roof. It's my responsibility and the responsibility of his mum to be the role models he deserves. If we were to act in any illegal way, it's a failure of his role models. Blame would and deservedly land at our feet. The parents should face either deportation or charges if born here for the failings that led to the children's illegal, well, the child's actually illegal activity. They were born in Rwanda, just for a bit of biographical background. Anil, I will come to your call on that. Also, after the news.
The head of one of the UK's worst performing water companies won't resign over major supply issues, but will give up his bonus. I'm LBC's Joseph Draper, live in Tunbridge Wells.
Is that enough? Just giving up the bonus? Six-figure bonus, by the way. And I'll remind you of his salary after this. 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC. The news is with Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor is to meet her US counterpart in Washington after expressing her anger that America went to war without an exit plan. Rachel Reeves says President Trump's folly in Iran means families here are suffering as a result. Two more men have been charged with murder following the death of Finbar Sullivan in Primrose Hill in North London. The 21-year-old died died after being attacked last week. And the Chief Secretary to the Treasury has told Nick that the Defence Investment Plan will be published as soon as possible. It follows major criticism from a former head of NATO who's warned a lack of spending has put the UK in peril. LBC weather, an unsettled and windy day for many. Rain will move eastwards through the UK later, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to €100,000 per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app. The XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
How about Specsave ears?
Not sure.
Do you get it? Specsave ears?
Yeah, but no.
Oh, okay. Specs, and we also do hearing two savers.
Think about it. Should have gone to Specs and we also do hearing two savers. Can't see it catching on.
Okay, so we're saying Specsavers do eyes and ears. Senses savers.
Technically true.
Yeah.
But actually terrible.
Oh.
At Specsavers, we're hearing experts too, and have been for over 20 years.
Oh, should we just stick to Specsavers then?
Yeah.
Book a free hearing check today.
Experience. It's knowing when something is worth waiting for, and when it isn't. That's why Saga Health Insurance offers unlimited GP appointments whenever you need them. With a choice of flexible plans, prompt tests and treatment, your health is taken care of. And right now, you'll get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Well, after that interesting diversion about the Summer of Sex campaign, let's come back to the rather more heated conversation about the future of AR's parents. What should happen? With one MP, fairly senior MP, suggesting they should be deported. Alan in Chessant, something you would support or not? Good morning.
Good morning. I do and I don't. So what AR did was horrific, and the parents should have really been there and say, but I've got young children myself. Mm-hmm. I appreciate they're very young, but if I saw any sort of fine like that, I'd be stepping into to make sure nothing of that sort of thing happened. But I think what my little thought on this is that as a second generation Asian in the United Kingdom, mm-hmm. I feel like if it happened to say, and not to be rude, but a white British person who'd been there for like just 20 generations, what would be the same thing happen to them?
We can't deport them, but I think they should go to jail.
Yeah, which I appreciate, but then in that aspect, what I think is then shouldn't the parents go to jail? I appreciate, yes, they probably should go back, but I think for my sake, it's more the fact of, God forbid this my child got to that point. I would hate myself for it. I'd despise them. But for me to be then sent back to India, for example, I'd be like, well, I'm never from there. But I appreciate why it would happen.
But you were born here, sir. Is that right?
Yeah.
Just to clarify, no one is suggesting that anyone should be, you know, deported who's born in the United Kingdom. But if someone was born overseas, bear in mind you do get deported anyway for very serious crimes such as murder, attempted murder, rape, and others. Well, I think failing to take action on someone who goes on to take the lives of three young girls is at least at that level.
Yeah, no, I would never disagree with that. You're 100% right there. I think. From what I saw in news reports when it happened, the parents had some sort of idea that their child wasn't all there.
Well, the interesting one, and I don't know whether the judge tackled this, and I will look it up, how did AR pay for them? Because he had no income. So one wonders whether it was mum and or dad's credit card or debit card or whatever, as Joan in Norwich suggested.
I think he's right, because I agree with all the young children that do walk around with any sort of weaponry. Like, where did it come from? Find them out part-time jobs, but I think it's highly unlikely. So.
Anil, thank you for holding the line. Best of luck raising your family. I know it's a challenge. It's the best job in the world if you're fortunate enough to be a dad, but it's not without its challenges. Chandra's in Newcastle. Chandra, good to have you on. How are you? Tell me what your view on this.
Very good morning, Nick.
Hello, sir.
Two points. Firstly, where is the research which confirms what proportion of parents had knowledge of their children's criminal actions. Now, if we are only talking about AR, because AR is a man of colour, and I do not condone. What he did is horrific actions.
I don't agree.
His actions are horrific. He should face justice. But this...
I'm sorry, I have to interrupt there, because I was on a journalist when James Bulger was murdered, and we talked a lot about those two white young boys, as they were then, pre-teens. It's irrespective of the skin colour. This is a story, irrespective of AR's background.
What?
Honestly, Chandra, it doesn't make any difference. We are not
simply talking about the responsibility which the parents hold. What we are talking about today is about sending them back to Rwanda. After 20-odd years they've lived in this country.
Yes.
What is the point at which a person, an immigrant or person of immigrant nature will ever be accepted in this country?
My father was. He came here, he worked, and he raised three sons.
£40,000.
And none of us got involved in murdering young girls, so it was never a problem for my dad. It's pretty straightforward, Chandra.
Sorry, please say it again.
I say my late father came here from Switzerland, was involved in raising three sons. I am one of them. None of us went on to murder girls at a dance class. My father lived an enjoyable life, died way too young. But there were no problems. As long as you do that, you'll be absolutely fine.
Using personal example is not the best
way. Well, you asked me, and I will.
Pursuing what is... No. That's a silly way of challenging my point.
Is it? I think the worst thing my father ever did was caught speeding, as I recall. I don't think he ever did any worse than that.
What is the justification of purely sending parents?
Because they failed to act. The moral duty, I remind you of the words of the judge, the moral duty they ought to have taken, they failed to do it, and they, in a way, and I'm putting this in single quotes, facilitated those grotesque crimes, Chandra.
What consequences are other parents facing?
I keep saying it. It's my fault. I'm not getting it through. If these people have been born in the United Kingdom, I think we need to look at legislation where, when you have known what is going on, you might have been involved in the facilitation of what was going on, then you have to be held accountable. As the judge says as regards moral duty, the politician goes further and suggests deportation. Chandra, I enjoyed your conversation. I look forward to hearing from you again. Let's go to other matters. And you remember the drama over South East Water, particularly over some of the holiday periods? Well, now the boss has said that he will not be taking his bonus. That's a cool £115,000 after the company admitted leaving thousands of homes without water was, quotes, a failure. The company caused water outages for tens of thousands of properties. You may recall the boss, David Hinton, was hauled in front of a panel of MPs. So he won't go without his bonus. Let's join LBC's Joseph Draper, who's in one of the affected areas, Tunbridge Wells in Kent, joins in now. Joseph, he's not taking his bonus, but what's his basic salary? Morning.
Yeah, well, morning. Don't worry too much about his welfare, Nick, because he'll still have £400,000 salary to get him through the year. This is, of course, South East Water chief executive David Hinton, full of contrition in front of MPs yesterday, apologising for those water shortages which left thousands of households without running water for several days, even weeks, over the winter, shutting schools, businesses, even affecting care homes, Nick, and a kidney dialysis centre. He faced a grilling in front of the Environmental, Food and Rural Affairs Committee yesterday, as you say, promising to give up that £115,000 bonus. His tone very different compared to his last appearance before MPs when they attacked him for his lack of accountability. And he gave his company an 8 out of 10 rating. Clearly, he's far more apologetic this time around. Now, I'm here in Tunbridge Wells. It was one of the worst affected areas for those shortages. I've been asking people whether his response yesterday was good enough.
Are the people in business who perform badly have resigned?
Did you see his comments to MPs yesterday? He said he would give up his annual bonus this year.
I don't think that cuts anything. I don't think that has any meaning. He's whether you give up a little bit of money as a sort of penalty for a bad performance is neither here nor there. I think bad performance should always be punished, and he should be gone.
I think he should 100% resign, yeah, absolutely. He's not taking any accountability at all, so he's foregoing his bonus. Great.
You don't think that's good enough?
No, I don't. No.
I do think he should resign because it was just outrageous what happened. They're making profit. They're not putting money back into our systems to maintain our water flow, so he should resign.
Now, Nick, Hinton's previously described the issues at a water treatment plant, which led to some of those shortages, as unforeseeable, variably blaming the weather, climate change, even people working from home. This week, though, he acknowledged the company failed to act on early warning signs, and here's what he said to MPs yesterday.
There were definitely early warnings at the treatment works that the treatment was not performing as it should. We should have reacted on those earlier warnings quicker, and our problem solving around it when we got into that situation was too slow.
This is unlikely to be the end of David Hinton's troubles, though, Nick. MPs still pushing for his resignation yesterday, including the local Liberal Democrat MP, Mike Martin, who called his evidence utterly pathetic. And the regulator Ofwat is planning a £22 million fine of the company over previous supply issues. That's the second largest in its history, so I'm sure there's a lot of trouble ahead for South East Water.
LBC's Joseph Draper reporting from Tunbridge Wells in Kent. Let's come back to our conversation about AR. Dell in Hertfordshire, the fat Robert degenerate, as I call him, is pushing this should raise alarm bells. It's a racist idea taking advantage of a tragic situation. It's sickening reformer pushing for this. It has everything to do with race and colour. I can't believe in the 21st century we're having such a discussion. Let's pick that up with Joe in Tooting. Joe, your reaction to what the politician is suggesting? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. And again, I love your show, but I'm tending to not agree with you this morning on this subject.
Okay.
I think Robert Jenrick is definitely pushing the race card. I had this situation related to somebody from Europe. Would he be on stage? I mean, would still want the same thing. I still want them deported. In a sense, I can see that argument.
So you do want them deported or you don't want them deported?
Look, if they can't adhere to this societal standards that we all have, then why should they be allowed the freedom of our country? It's simple. It's not a hard one. I do think, however, that we're looking at this from the wrong angle. People who have really failed us are the parents have failed us, without a doubt. But the people who have really failed us are the social workers who turned around to the headmistress when she pointed out that this boy was... None of them are going to be prosecuted. None of them are even going to be held accountable for this failing, Nick. They're the ones that failed us. We can have as many safeguards as possible, but not many parents are going to be shopping their children. So we'll never get a situation where this can be universal. And we're always going to be coming back to this if we don't have safeguards in place, Nick.
How is it that when made aware of that by the head teacher at the special school, the social worker replied, "You're just characterising him as a black boy with a knife"?
Nick, I come from an ethnic minority. And quite frankly, I am appalled by what they said. I am so disgusted that they wouldn't take into account the seriousness of a boy carrying a knife in this age where we've got so many kids killing kids on our streets, especially the streets of London. I can't understand how they couldn't take this seriously. I can't understand they could just categorise it as just a woman being racist. This is a boy who's been expelled from another school for carrying a knife. He's just a beast. But he's been expelled from another school for carrying a knife, and they point out that he's doing the same again in another school. I mean, Nick, I'm going to get this anecdotal, but I've got a friend, and her daughter's really scared to go into school. She's still one of her schoolmates. It's in Essex. It's carrying a knife into school. The teachers are sitting home several times.
You've got a friend whose daughter is carrying a knife into school?
No. She's scared to go into school.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, no worries. Because she says one of the pupils in her school is in court carrying a knife into school.
How old is this girl?
She's 10. He's 11. Yes, 11. He's a couple of months older. Nick, and she's scared to go to school. Her mum says that she doesn't know what to do. She wants her children to have an education, but she doesn't feel that the school's taking it seriously. The boy's been caught twice carrying knives. He's also violent towards other children. It's just thought that it's going to be another one of these cases, and nobody in authority seems to be taking her views, and all the other parents as well, who have all complained about this boy still being in the school. No one's taking them seriously.
Joe, thanks for everything and your input on that. Have yourself a good day, and thanks for holding, Michael. You'll be the next caller. Steve says, weaponising the appalling murder of three little girls is disgusting. Is there no depth reform will go to for political gain? We'll come back to that conversation. It's 9:45. LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor is to meet her US counterpart in Washington later after expressing her anger that America went to a war with Iran without an exit plan. Two further men have been charged with murder following the death of Finbar Sullivan in Primrose Hill in North London. And speaking to Nick, a senior minister has refused to be drawn on a timeline for publishing the defence investment plan, despite criticism from a former head of NATO. LBC weather, an unsettled and windy day for many. Rain moving eastwards later, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25 anti-clockwise to Junction 19 at Watford. It was after that car broke down earlier. Has been recovered, but it's still very slow. One lane's been closed on the M25 as well anti-clockwise at Junction 13 at Staines, and that's where a lorry's broken down. The A12's reopened now southbound at Junction 18 at Danbury. The investigation is over, but there are still lengthy queues. Long delays as well on the A12 and also the approach road to the Blackwall Tunnel northbound. It's because of the barrier repair works which are taking place just north of the tunnel. So there are delays on the A12 all the way from Bow, and northbound it's slow from the Sun in the Sands. And on the trains, Chiltern Railways are delayed by about an hour at Marylebone.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Ignoring Honest Bob's latest racist belch, as frankly everybody should do, would it be fair to name and shame the professionals whose negligence contributed to the Southport murders?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the future you want. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Imad, a GCSE student in Year 11.
Alongside my core GCSEs, such as Maths, English and Science, I study creative subjects such as Media, Drama, Art and Design, Business and Music Technology, which are all recognised by the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Selling your car can be super simple. If you choose We Buy Any Car, because they sort out any outstanding finance for you. Just bring along your final settlement agreement. If only they could make parallel parking simpler.
To the right a bit, mate. Yeah, back a bit. Bit more. Oh, no, too far.
We Buy Any Car. Selling made simple. To sell your car today, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to €100,000 per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app. The XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
Dreaming of a new kitchen? Getting started couldn't be easier. At Wix, you can begin planning your new kitchen with our design consultants. Simply arrange a free home measure or an in-store design consultation. Book your free kitchen design appointment and turn all your ideas into reality at Wix.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do is...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
weight loss?
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, lower fat diet. Always read the label.
Take Irish Ferries from Dover to Calais, where your pet travels in the pet lounge. You'd be barking not to. Irish Ferries. See travel differently.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
We talked about that water boss still getting a fairly healthy salary of £400,000. Ashley in Beaconsfield says the fact Dave Hinton is still in a job is insulting. Anyone else with this level of incompetence and lack of self-awareness would lose their job. He's never going to resign. No one resigns from a £400,000 a year job. Get him gone. South East Water and the people of Kent and elsewhere deserve so much better. On the subject of AR, Nick in Gillingham, when people manage to make the murder of children about race, something has gone seriously wrong. What Generic is trying to do is that if you're welcomed here from another country, it's a privilege. Abuse that privilege and you've blown it. Simple. Michael's in East Molesey. Michael, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Your view of what Mr. Jenner is saying.
Well, I just wanted to sort of put the point that if everything in terms of the realities of this awful case were exactly as they are at this point in time, apart from hypothetically that the parents of the culprit were, you know, not immigrants but had been born and bred here themselves, then you know, unless there was a legal mechanism in place for those parents in the hypothetical case to be held responsible or to be liable for their actions or inactions, unless that is the case, then I don't think you can say to the actual parents of the culprit, well, we couldn't, you know, there's no mechanism legally to sort of hold you responsible, but because you're immigrants, we can do something instead, and that is to deport you. That seems to me to be, you know, completely, completely inappropriate and wrong. And frankly, it's discriminatory against them. And I've got no sympathy for them, because there's a great discussion to be had about whether parents, regardless of immigrants or non-immigrants, should be held responsible for their children. It's not right to say, well, we can't punish you that way, but because you're immigrants, we'll punish you this way.
Michael, can I just ask you this question? Do you think that there needs to be a review of legislation? Because currently, the only way that the parents of AR could have faced any kind of legal recourse was if he had been involved in the act or preparation of an act of terrorism. The parents of the three dead girls say the parents should face some kind of law, some kind of hearing, some kind of charge. I am arguing that whatever it takes, there should be an issue of whether you're born in the UK or not. If you do not prevent an act of this, then there is every chance you're going to be hauled before a court. That's what I think needs to happen.
I agree with that, Nick. I absolutely agree with that. But I don't think in this case, where we are today, that we should therefore say, well, we can't actually push you down that route with these parents now, but what we can do is deport you because you happen to be immigrants. That's the point I want to make. But I agree with the broad thrust of what you've just said.
So Jenrick's
but that's
gone
nothing to do with race or immigration.
So Jenrick's gone too far. If we haul it back to sanity, the idea that, irrespective of whether you were born in Rwanda or Rochester, if you allow your son, or indeed your daughter, and you in a way are seen to facilitate it, you could face charges, just as if you were allowing terrorism. I think there's a lot of merit to that.
I agree. Well, I don't think Jenrick would be out there doing the rounds with you and with the Telegraph and so on if the parents of the culprit here happened to be fully, you know, completely born and bred in this country. I think he's taking advantage of it as a political day, and I think that is absolutely reprehensible. Not surprising on his part, but utterly reprehensible.
I see exactly what you're saying, and thank you, Michael. I'm just trying to haul it back to what I think a lot of people would see as a point of sanity. Which is, and again, we must respect the parents of the three dead girls, and we must at least listen to, not necessarily implement, listen to their wishes. And they believe the parents should face some kind of action. And I think they're right, because this is criminal irresponsibility. Shipping them off to Rwanda, well, that's another conversation. But some kind of charge? Surely. Michael, thank you. Andrew in Brighton. Andrew, your take on this. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I trust you are too.
Yeah, not too bad. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Good to have you on, Governor. Off you go. Tell me what you're going to say.
I mean, I'm a bit torn with the sort of deportation and stuff. All I can say is, from a personal point of view, I'm an immigrant myself, immigrant family. We've had a similar situation where a family member's committed a very serious crime.
It's not before the courts now, is it?
No. But this is a few years back, so it's all been dealt with.
Did it involve taking a life? Do you mind my asking?
No, it did not. No, it wasn't that serious. Okay. But it involved a weapon. At the time, well, a gun, should I say. But at the time, it wasn't. It turned out to be a toy gun, but the victims weren't aware of that.
Oh, my God. Right, okay.
So he was only 15 at the time, managed to get away scot-free. The police had no clue at all. We, obviously, as a family, had no clue that he was sort of engaging in these behaviours. Mm. We then managed to find out what he'd done. We found the weapon in the house and stuff. And as a family, we took the decision to hand him into the police. When it went to the courts, the judge actually...
Was that a universal decision? Or did mum or an aunt or dad resist it? What happened?
No, universal decision.
Wow.
We just thought, So when it went up to the courts, the judge actually commended the family and mainly his mum for having the strength and courage to turn him in. Because, like I said, they would have never found him. The police had no clue who'd done it or anything. So I just think it is tough, but people need to have the conviction to do the right thing.
What happened to him? Sorry, how old did you say he was?
He was a minor at the time. I think he was 15 at the time. So
did he go into a youth offender? What happened to him?
He did, yeah. He did, right. Yeah. He went through that process and then sort of came out of it now. So
and how is he now?
Okay.
I was going to ask, is he? How many years? Can I ask how many? I don't want to give you any identification, but was it a number of years ago now?
Yeah, it was about 12 years ago.
How is he, the young man, now?
He's come out now. He's rehabilitated. He's obviously, that time that he spent in that facility has kind of...
So here's the question, lastly, and credit to you and your family. That couldn't have been an easy thing to do, but clearly, was AR's parents, the victims' families, want some kind of legal recourse? Are they right?
I think they're within their rights to ask for that. I mean, obviously, I've not read the ruling. I'm not sure what's come out, what AR's parents knew and what they didn't know. But I just think there is a responsibility as parents you have to take. And I know a lot of people have been talking about race and stuff. I wouldn't go down that road. I think as parents, we need to have some sort of responsibility. If you don't know, like, for instance, our family, we had no clue.
No.
But as soon as we found out, we did something about it.
Credit to all of you, Andrew. Very, very moving story. Brilliantly told. Best wishes to everyone involved. And indeed to the young man now. He's found his way on. Way forward. Let's get quickly to Sandra in Leighton Buzzard. You've got about a minute and a bit, Sandra. Go ahead. What do you want to say? The idea of some legal action.
Yeah, very quickly. Why aren't the parents of AR being prosecuted for aiding and abetting?
No current legislation allows for it.
Well, other people are prosecuted if they know that,
Yeah. I mean, I think the argument is they did not know he was going to go out on that day, make his way to a dance class and kill three girls and seriously injure many others.
They knew that he was amassing weapons.
They did. I think they may well have funded that. I don't know this, but there's a possibility they could have funded some or all of them.
Yeah. If he wasn't working, he didn't even go to school, apparently. So, so how was he getting these weapons? And they knew that he had a cache of weapons.
Yes.
You know, you don't do that as a hobby or for fun, do you?
No, you don't. No, you're absolutely right. And this all comes back, Sandra, thank you, it all comes back to remember what Sir Adrian said. The judge said that there was a moral duty and the parents did not do what they should have done. I sense this conversation, because of the extraordinary gravity of the case, will continue. But I've got no more time to calls on that today, because I want to tell you a little bit about who's going to be joining us tomorrow.
When you say, I don't want to be out on strike today, yes, you do, because you have made that choice.
That is, of course, the Health Secretary, Wes Breaching, and he was appearing here on Call the Cabinet exclusively on LBC. That was in November when he took a call from a resident doctor who was saying, I don't want to, but I'm going to go to work. And that was when he told him, well, you do have a choice. 5 months on, no end in sight. Fears the government and the BMA are now effectively in a permanent deadlock. Wes Streeting will return to the studio. We're here tomorrow morning from 7 to take your calls in Call the Cabinet. Wes Streeting, starting tomorrow morning from 7. If you missed today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Just to remind you, if you're so minded, you can get a call in. You can book a call to Wes Streeting. He's going to be here, Call the Cabinet, exclusively on LBC tomorrow. But that's me for today. Coming up the other side of the news here on LBC is James O'Brien. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and tempting though it is to turn ourselves immediately to J.D. Vance this morning, or last night, lecturing the Pope on matters theological. I'm just going to say that again before I set up what we will be talking about first. The Vice President of the United States, who recently became a Catholic, trying to lecture the Pope on theology. I don't know what the equivalent of that would be. My brain isn't fully fired up yet to come up with the crushing analogy, but we may by the end of the show. We begin, though, in hideous waters. We return to hideous waters with a question that is actually very important. The professionals who failed the victims of the Southport murderer, should they run the risk of being named and shamed?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
from Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. The Chancellor is due to meet her US counterpart in Washington, despite being at odds over the war with Iran. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says a small bit of economic pain is worth stopping Tehran from having nuclear weapons. But Rachel Reeves says she's frustrated by America's lack of an exit plan. US Vice President J.D. Vance told a rally in the US that Donald Trump is holding out for a grand bargain.
And what he's basically offering to Iran is very simple, and frankly, it's something that no president has, I think, has had the ability to offer. He said that if you're willing to act like a normal country, we are willing to treat you economically like a normal country. He doesn't want a small deal.
The chief secretary to the Treasury has told LBC the defense investment plan will be published as soon as possible. It follows major criticism from a former head of NATO who's warned a lack of spending has put the UK in peril. Ministers insist defense spending's increasing each year. Another two men have been charged with murder after the death of a 21-year-old student in North London. Finbar Sullivan died after he was attacked on Primrose Hill last Tuesday. The two 25-year-olds will appear in court later. MPs will vote for a second time on whether to ban under-16s from social media. The Prime Minister is under pressure to back a Lords amendment made to the Children's Wellbeing and Schools Bill. A government consultation is due to run until the end of next month. Conservative peer and former Education Minister Lord Nash has told LBC this needs swifter action.
The government acted really quite decisively on pornography. They acted decisively on nudification apps. And all I'm saying to them is, particularly now, following these game-changing US cases where some pretty shocking material was disclosed by the social media companies and to have deliberately designed addictive apps. These are game changers, and the Prime Minister has said that and that he will now act.
And a watchdog has fined two driving schools owned by the AA more than £4 million for what's known as drip pricing. The Competition and Markets Authority says the firms had not included a mandatory booking fee in their upfront prices. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 4 points at 10,614. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, an unsettled and windy day for many. Rain moving eastward through the UK with a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm David Dom.
British Gas have this thing. We call it home care. We'll fix all sorts, and it's unlimited repairs. Expert engineers will solve the upset of boilers not boiling or taps that won't wet. Electrics playing tricks or a pipe that's broke. We're there for everyone, even blue furry folk. Your home won't feel booby-trapped. It'll feel just like new. British Gas, taking care of things and looking after you. T's and C's apply. Excess options available per repair.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after ten, and I'm conscious sometimes of starting off. I don't go off on a tangent. I start the show on a tangent and then have to sort of steer it back to what we want to talk about subsequently, and that can be a little bit distracting. In fact, I've literally just done it, haven't I? I've gone off on a tangent. You've got no idea what we're talking about yet, and I've gone off on a tangent about what I normally do at the top of the show, but I promise you this is relevant. I saw two members of staff, I suppose you'd call them. I don't know whether they were specific security guards normal shop assistants. I think they had a specific responsibility for being security guards. But I was in Marks and Spencer's yesterday. I know I'm a walking middle class cliche, but frankly, their raspberry puddings cannot be improved upon by man or beast. I was in Marks and Spencer's yesterday, and I saw two lads grab, if you like, catch a shoplifter, and it really struck me. It really struck me that you don't see that much very often. And in fact, I've shared stories with you from the same branch of Marks & Spencer's about the impunity with which some people with baskets full of goods would waltz out of the shop. But I mention this because it's really hard and it's really physical. And I think armchair store detectives like me and everybody else who does what I do for a living, whether in print or on air, and of course in the comment sections of every media organisation under the sun, completely underestimate how bloody hard it is. Because you're talking about someone who is likely to get immediately and very violent. And this chap did. And the two lads that were containing him needed to be very, very fit for purpose. I'm not casting aspersions on anybody, but I've seen people in uniform at the doors of supermarkets who would have been flat on their back within a nanosecond if the person that these two lads were catching had been the one that they were trying to stop. So it made me realise that when you wonder why so much crime of that nature goes unchallenged, it's actually a really easy question to answer. Unless, in this case, the store is prepared both to prioritise and pay people to take fairly immense physical risk, then the alternative is to let the steam puddings walk out of the door unmolested and leave your staff safe. So, fair play to whoever has made the decision at Marks and Spencer's, whether it's a board level or a management level or whether it was just the Chiswick High Road branch. And huge kudos to the two young men who I kind of watched a bit, because I walked past one of them and he was on his radio and I followed events and they were tracking this guy and he was making his way. And then they just pounced and he sort of started struggling quite violently and they held him and they carried him into the back of the store. And it made me feel embarrassed about the blasé nature with which I have discussed these things. It made me feel a little bit embarrassed about the way in which we talk about this stuff as if, you know, someone is easily to blame and someone is easily identifiable and we do their job much better than they would and we know that they're at fault and we know that they should be held accountable for it and why aren't they doing this anyway? It was really hard. I don't know how often you encounter physical violence or at least, you know, high level physical exertion between human beings, but it is always, unless, and if I am now describing you, I pity you. I really do. I'm so sorry for the fact that you have ceased to be traumatized in any way, shape or form by physical violence. It should traumatize us. And that's just spectators. You see it. It's not rubbernecking. It's like a sense of shock. It's an atavistic, visceral, oh my Lord. Oh, that's so out of the ordinary. My heart's going like that. And there's, you know, a couple of little old ladies in the foyer of the shop and they are deeply disturbed by what they are seeing and people don't know what to do. They're thinking, do I object? Are they being too rough with the guy? But he's a thief and So I'm sorry that I have talked about these things in a fashion that makes everything sound easy. And next time we turn our attention to low-level crime or indeed the sheer difficulty of doing what journalists, and I wish I could say tabloid journalists with the usual sneer that I deploy at this point, but I don't consider myself to be in that category, and I have done it. So next time we turn our attention to that, we will do better. We will do better. And for reasons that I hope are clear, I found myself thinking about that this morning when I read about the calls for officials who failed failed over the Southport attack to be held to account. Families in Southport cannot be sure that officials who made catastrophic errors before the murder of three girls are not still making the same mistakes, a former victims commissioner has said, suggesting that they should be held to account by name. This is Vera Baird, King's Counsel, pointing out that those who failed to properly monitor the killer should not be able to shrug it off. She said, it really is time for personal accountability. We have tragic failures many times followed by public inquiries, but nobody actually has to stop doing what they're doing badly. I do not see why that should be the case. Except, of course, it's not necessarily the case, because there was one very infamous incident in the years that I've been doing this job where I think Ed Balls, as children's minister, called for the head of a head of children's services in Haringey Council, and she was subsequently fired, and she subsequently won, I think, over £500,000 in compensation for